that we're waiting on just indicated he'll be here in just a couple minutes. So if it's all right with members, we've got the agenda before us. We do have one individual who's actually set for the public testimony. She has a three-month-old with her, and I thought if it's unless there's any objection from members, maybe we could let her go first and provide her testimony, and then we'll go back to our regular agenda. Is there anyone that wants to object to the mom with a three-month-old? Anyone? I'm probably going to mess up your last name. Is it Gigner or Gogner? Gogner. Feel free to approach. I'm sorry you're so far away from us. I feel like I should slice a turkey or something from here. But thank you for joining us. If you can just identify yourself and your helper for the record.
Great. Hello, my name is Denise Gagner, and this is my daughter, Willa. We live in Minneapolis with my husband. I am self-employed. I work for myself as a massage therapist, and I also teach children's dance classes at a couple of nonprofits in Minneapolis and preschools in the area. I've been really excited about the Affordable Care Act because as a self-employed person, I've never had access to health insurance through an employer. So my options that I have had have been limited, and they've often not been really great options. There's been years when I've been shopping for plans and haven't even been able to find a plan that would cover a yearly routine physical exam. So those years I was paying for my health insurance and then paying out of pocket on top of that for just basic routine care. When I got married, I was able to join my husband's plan. So I've been able to get good coverage through him, but we've been paying a really high monthly premium for me to be on his plan. So when Minsure went online in October, I went on right away to look at plans, hoping that I could find an option for me that would be still provide me with good coverage but save our family some money. And luckily, we did find a lot of different options for me. The plan we ended up enrolling in was through Preferred One. And it's their Ultimate Select D plan. The monthly premium for me, is $192 a month. So that's over $250 savings a month for us. So over the year, we'll be saving at least $2,250. And if we don't have to pay the deductible, if I have a normal healthy year, we'll be saving $3,000. So we're really excited about the amount of money that we're going to be saving. And also with the plan, we are able to keep our same care providers, and I also won't have any co-insurance with this plan, which I'm also really excited about. down the road, we're actually hoping to also enroll our daughter in a plan. We did some initial browsing on the website, and we can also save a lot in our monthly premiums for her as well, so that's our plan next year for her. The only problem that we had was actually creating an account on the website. We initially tried right away in October. And we weren't able to create an account until November. We just kept getting error messages when they were trying to do the security questions for my identity. But once we created the account, it was really easy to enroll in our plan. We paid online. Everything went through smoothly. We got our insurance cards before the first of the year. So for us, it was a great experience, and we're saving a lot of money.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Questions for Ms. Gagner? Did you have a technical issue that we're going to get it? It was kind of a funny joke on my part, but not terribly funny. We have there's two members of our body that are going to try to call in, and they're in the process of trying to do that. So we're going to try to get them connected as well. I was taking a couple quick notes, but I wanted to confirm you actually were able to keep your own doctor.
Yep. Yeah, we can keep the same care providers.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions that folks have for Ms. Gagner? All right. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate both you and Willa joining us this afternoon. And members, thank you for indulging me and Ms. Gagner and letting her come up first. We've got the approval of the minutes from the September 24th, 2013 meeting. Senator Lurie will move those minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Same sign. Seeing none, that motion carries. Then we're on to item 4 on our agenda. That is an update from the Minsure Board Chair, Mr. Buettner, and an introduction of the interim CEO, Mr. Leitz. Gentlemen, would you please join us?
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I may, in the past, Minsure presentations have been quite lengthy, and our questions have been moved to the end of the presentations, and so I'm wondering if the chair will indulge questions during the presentation.
Not just indulge, but encourage.
Thank you.
The only thing that I would caution members on is I understand it, the youth of Minnesota have taken over the building. And this is the one room that is available, which is a wonderful, wonderful problem to have. They have the room at 5 and apparently will throw us physically out of here. So I do want to keep, we've got a number of folks that have shown up to testify as well. So we want to encourage some questions, but we may then pause, go to the next item on the agenda, and work our way back and forth. Gentlemen, welcome. Who's going to kick off?
Actually,
okay.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Benson.
If it starts to look like we're going to run out of time, then I would like to timely propose that we set the next meeting date so that we have some certainty.
We and Senator Benson and I, just briefly talking with Senator Laurie, the hope is to set a regular, that's the last item on the agenda, set a regular meeting schedule. I ran into a bit of an issue when I tried to get this group together over the holidays in November and December. We are a very busy group. And so we ran into some issues trying to find dates that work. But if we get on a regular meeting schedule, if people can get on their calendars, we're hopeful that that'll help us be able to meet more routinely.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you. No, I appreciate the time on the agenda to provide an update from the last time we got together, which was really the beginning of the Minshew open enrollment period. And as Senator Benson noted, I will make my remarks brief because this is your meeting and I know you have a full agenda and a lot of questions to ask. I like to start off every meeting with the board is pleased to serve the state of Minnesota and fulfill the mission of Minsure to ensure that every Minnesota resident, regardless of health status, can easily find, choose, and purchase a health insurance product that they value and does not consume a disproportionate amount of their income. Since this board assumed authority for Minsure in late August, we have formally met a dozen times. Essentially, we've been meeting with staff every other week. This does not include the time that board members have spent with advisory committee meetings, with one-on-ones with other stakeholders, one-on-one with staff members. I personally stopped counting at 200 meetings that I've had. But at every meeting, and foremost in our inquiries, have always been how to achieve operational excellence while fulfilling our mission. And since that time in August, when we assumed authority, we've had experienced a number of sentinel events at Minsure. We've seen the lowest rates in the country. We've launched the public website. Over 70,000 individuals have signed up and have better, more affordable health care coverage than they've ever had. We've also seen our share of errors. We've had more software errors and failures than any system should have. We've had inadequate testing, both for the consumer and the user, as well as between vendors. We've had inadequate training and tools for partners, for navigators, for brokers, others working with us, and an overwhelmed call center. And we've had a change in leadership. Some events that we've seen have been both successes and failures bred out of these issues. For example, our vendors have stepped up, IBM and others I expect to do the same to help us resolve some of the issues. The community has stepped up. We've seen great services from some of our community partners like General Mills or United Health Group. And once again, I fully expect others to help achieve the mission for the state of Minnesota. And we have an opportunity to establish new leadership. I could not be more pleased to have Scott Light serving as our interim CEO. He has the skill sets and has already, in 3 weeks, taken a number of actions to see what we can do going forward. What we have as an organization, as a board, is a unique blend of private and public business. It's a unique program versus consumerism, in the sense that we don't actually have anything to offer other than a conduit for Minnesotans to find better access to better health care insurance. As a board, we're responsible for Minsure. While thousands have been helped, many people have had serious problems with Minsure. These problems are unacceptable, and we apologize to all Minnesotans who have been affected. We know there's a lot more work to be done before Minsure lives up to its full potential, and as a board, our authority and our obligation is to the future and to the mission of this organization. We expect the staff to perform. We expect the staff to identify and raise issues and help solve issues. And we ourselves as a board expect to be able to identify those issues and help lead and help resolve some of those issues. Things like, in the last 2 weeks, demanding an end-to-end review, things about driving strategy, establishing open and more transparent communication, and like all of our business partners, we've jumped in to help, to attend meetings, to work through some of these issues. We have a relatively small board with a diverse set of experiences, and it's highly focused on execution and serving its mission of ensuring coverage for all those who choose to. This goal will take time. It won't be accomplished overnight. And while Scott and his team are taking steps to improve the MNsure experience, we're talking about months, not days. There will be more bumps along the way. That is the way the nature of startups, and that's what MNsure is. But the board will continue to dig in, lead, push, and assist. One just quick final comment is, before we get drowned in the minutiae of the details of what's happened, where are we going, and what we can see to build upon the success of MNsure, is my personal revelation. As my first experience in public service, seeing that we have the support of so many vast, diverse members of our community, from legislators to other agencies, from the executive branch to carriers to providers, the amount of work that all of these folks have done and have put in above and beyond not only their expectations and our expectations, but what could be assumed to be their level of benefit that they could get from a fully functioning public market is a testament to what Minnesotans can do together. And that cooperation and collaboration is already delivering some real results, and I don't want to overlook our real results while acknowledging we have real problems. We do have low rates. We do have 70,000 Minnesotans who have more affordable, better coverage than they've had in the past, and we continue to have the patience and persistence of all of our stakeholders to improve the access to health care coverage in this state. Thank you again for your willingness to serve on this oversight committee and devote your time to making sure that this succeeds. And with that, I'll introduce Scott Leitz, our interim CEO, and you may have some opening remarks as well, I assume.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Leitz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Scott Leitz. I'm the interim CEO at MNsure. I started in this role on December 18th. I'm very pleased to be before the committee, and I'm very much looking forward to working with the committee in my role. As Chair Buettner mentioned, we have had some successes at MNsure, over 70,000 individuals enrolled through the year, and we also saw that the rates that people are paying are among the lowest in the country. But I also want to be very clear to acknowledge the challenges that remain, and there are many of them. The site still doesn't function the way it needs to. It functions most well for some people and for many people, but it needs to improve and it needs to do a much better job than it currently does. Too many people are finding themselves unable to go through the process as best they can. We know that most people can get through, but many and too many run into challenges. Because of the challenges that we've faced, I want to take a special moment just to simply thank the people and the partners that we've had along the way who have been extraordinarily patient during this process. That includes the health plans of Minnesota, who have been enormously helpful. They meet with us now on a daily basis, devote a lot of their high-level staff, top staff, to making this venture successful. I want to thank them for the efforts that they've taken. I also want to thank groups who are involved in enrolling individuals in MNsure. The patience that they've shown as the challenges have been in front of them has been enormous. That includes the brokers of Minnesota, who do so much to get people into private sector insurance coverage and help out on the public sector as well as the navigators who are doing really remarkable work in trying to help low-income individuals ensure that they get into coverage. But mostly I also want to thank, before I do that, the counties of Minnesota, who have also been very patient as we've been going through our processes in improving the site. But most of all, I want to thank the consumers of Minnesota, who have been extremely patient as we've brought this site up. Again, 70,000 have managed to find coverage through MNsure, and we look forward to working with them moving forward. But we need to do better, and we will do better as an organization. One of the things that we can do to do better and we need to do better on is we want to ensure the transparent flow of information. That includes with all of our stakeholder partners, but also with committees such as this that do the important roles in oversight. We do plan to seek the advice and structured input from those same organizations I just mentioned to ensure that we're getting a broad sweep of input as we go about improving our process for MNsure. These partners are critical partners for us. I want to mention a few things that we'll be undertaking in the coming weeks to improve the processes at MNsure. The first thing that I want to mention is that as of yesterday, we began an end-to-end review of the MNsure website. We have asked Optum a company out of Minnetonka to come and do an end-to-end review of the MinSure system. That includes things such as examining our technology and our software, looking at that end-to-end. As many of you may know, the system is complex and it's made up of multiple vendors. It's important that we understand where the challenges have been, as the vendors both have challenges within their products, but how they interact with each other so that we can diagnose and address the challenges that are there. We're also having them look at our call center and give us advice and recommendations on how we can improve the consumer process. This has been one of the more visible points of frustration for individuals, very legitimately and rightly so, and we want to improve that process for consumers moving through. And then finally, we're asking Optum to review our project structure and our overall programmatic structure within MinSure and our interactions with the vendors. This is a very, very important, although not particularly sexy topic. It's a critically important and mission-critical topic to ensuring that we have a well-functioning operational system. Optum did start on the ground yesterday. They brought a large team of individuals who have been working with state staff, with DHS, with MinSure staff, with Minute, as well as the vendors, to gain a full understanding of the system and to have bring back recommendations to us. We do anticipate that we will have findings from them next week, and we will use those findings as a roadmap to help guide our efforts moving forward. And moving forward is very important because, as we know, we have a March 31st deadline for the second half of the open enrollment period. And while we anticipate on a daily basis having the site function better than it currently does, we also know that there will be persistent challenges with the site. And that's something that we simply acknowledge is likely to be the case up through that open enrollment period. Because we anticipate that there will be continued challenges for individuals, we do encourage them, however, to come through the site. We believe that most people who come in are able to get through the site, but we know that there will be some people who will be not be able to have a complete experience end to end. To that end, we have started contingency planning and anticipate putting in processes that for those individuals who come onto the site and are not able to fully get into coverage and need to meet that March 31st deadline, we're going to be putting in place manual processes to ensure that they're able to do that and properly bringing up the amount of resources that are necessary to do that. We realize this is suboptimal, and this will be more of a paper process than an electronic process, but it's also realistic. We know that not everyone will be able to get through, and we want to plan for that. And if we are pleasantly surprised and we make substantial progress between now and March 31st, that will be a very good thing. However, we need to plan in case it is not. Secondly, a very visible and I would say very legitimate source of frustration for many people, whether they be consumers, whether they be partners such as brokers or navigators, has been their inability and challenge in getting through to talk to people at the call center. I want to mention that the challenges that they've had have really been linked to the IT challenges that we've had. We have had two independent outside groups come in and take a look at the call center, and what they both independently reported is that the call center is actually structured well. However, the challenges that we have is that the calls and the types of calls we're getting are simply not the typical calls that a call center would have. They're much more complex, and as a result, they're longer, and they take longer, and it has resulted in unacceptably long times for individuals on waiting to have their questions answered. We are moving forward to add additional staff at MinSure to deal with these incoming calls, and also have a plan to move to do outsourcing of some of the call center activities to outside firms so that we have additional bodies who are able to answer calls. We do anticipate this will bring down call times moving forward. Finally, I want to conclude with a couple of comments. I want the committee to know and the committee to understand and that I understand and highly respect the role that oversight entities have. We had a productive opening conference with Auditor Nobles and his staff this week. I have the highest regard and respect for the auditor and the role that he plays. His audit will provide important information to improve our activities moving forward. We will fully cooperate with his audits, and we look forward to working with him. And then finally, I want this committee to know that I fully understand the important oversight role it has. I respect that and very much look forward to providing the committee with the information it needs to conduct its important work. I look forward to working with all of you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you, Mr. Leitz, and congratulations from all of us, I think, on your three-week anniversary at Minsure. We've got a couple folks on the list with questions, and Senator Benson among them. Just a couple mechanical things before we get too far. I believe that we now have a couple of members that are on the line. If we can just acknowledge if they're listening. Who's on the line at this point?
Senator Hayden is here.
Okay, Senator Hayden and Senator Sharon?
Senator Sharon is here.
And I heard Senator Hayden as well. Thank you both for joining us, and I apologize for the little telephone glitch we had at the beginning. Senator Jensen is also joining us today. She's not formally on the commission, but she's a legislator and asked to be able to join us, and we welcomed her to do that. I would also finally ask if members have their calendars either now or please have them by the end of the meeting so that we can actually find a date. If you don't have them with you, if there's somebody that you can text or contact so that we can set the date for the next meeting when we get to the end of the agenda. With that, I've got Senator Lori. I put myself on the list. Senator Benson's on the list, and Representative Hoppe as well. Senator Lori.
Thank you, Chair Atkins. You know, I'd like to appreciate the mea culpa that's been offered for the list of issues that have accrued to date and the approach that you've taken. But we are left with a whole set of questions just about how we're going to get out of the position that we're in today and how we position ourselves to better serve consumers into the future. Truthfully, one of the key aspects of this that I need to acknowledge is that DHS has stepped in and worked very hard to make sure that our public program enrollees are actually quite well served with retroactive coverage starting January 1st for everyone who stepped forward and is eligible for either Medicaid or Minnesota Care. But that leaves the private sector, the advanced premium tax credit eligible, or those not even seeking advanced premium tax credits, with much work to do. And, you know, one of the contingency planning with the manual processes leaves some questions. You know, the technology issues have become readily apparent to almost everyone, but what's taking place then is a whole set of additional work on behalf of DHS, on behalf of the partners that Mr. Leitz acknowledged. The broker community has put in a lot of additional work trying to help consumers navigate. The navigators have put in tremendous time, have worked with the reassessments that people have had to go through, have sat with consumers on these long wait times. This is for $25 or $70 is what a navigator is eligible to be paid. And, you know, while I am pleased to hear that there are some proposals on the table to begin to allow people to get through the system, I'm concerned at the manual nature of these and really want to hear about when we're going to be able to turn the corner. I understand that's tied to the end-to-end review that began yesterday with Optum, a subsidiary of United Health. And then, Mr. Leitz, you also mentioned the call center and that you're adding additional staff at Minsure and then outsourcing to some others. I'd like to dive in a little bit and find out a little bit more about that, because I think you're absolutely correct that there is a very significant link between the call center and these technology issues. I mean, truthfully, when somebody's waiting on a call center to try to get to a person, that person doesn't have, that they finally do get through to, doesn't have access to a better system than the initial user had when they were running into the problems in the first place. And so it's just a snowballing problem. And so I think we just really need to dive into some of these contingency plans, and it's going to lead to some questions about our budget and how we manage that. Because, again, all of these partners, counties, navigators, brokers, DHS, are also dedicating significant additional resources, and it's just not sustainable for any of these entities, and Minsure is not going to be able to pick up the tab for all of these, and the enrollment is affected. I mean, many individuals have left Minsure and sought products on the individual market, and that provides additional budgetary constraints. And so I need to hear more about when we're going to get through with this and have a system that's actually going to work a little bit better and how this rolls out into our budget.
Mr. Leitz, can you address that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lurie, I think the first thing that I would mention, and you referenced it with regards to sort of the system working better than it currently does. I think we took a step this week to bring in Optum to really start that process in earnest. One of the observations that I've had since joining the organization is in looking at the way the system is structured, it is structured in a manner that involves multiple vendors. And so it's been important for us, I think, stepping back to really have someone come in from the outside and take a very holistic view and a very holistic look at the system itself and how it is structured. That's the work that Optum is doing as of today on the ground doing that work. We engage them because they have expertise in these areas. They have been heavily involved in the work at the federal level in helping healthcare.gov and its work, as well as in a number of states that are state-based exchanges that have experienced similar challenges and sometimes to a greater degree, state of Maryland, the state of Oregon, the state of Massachusetts. So they come with a lot of expertise and experience, and bringing them onto the ground and having them take a look at this site holistically from end to end is going to give us a lot of information that we think, A, will allow us to plot a very good roadmap moving forward on how we actually do improve the system. B, we think it'll hopefully be information that others, such as the legislative auditor and others, can use as they do some of their work and are able to bring back information around how things can be improved. So that's one thing. Another thing I would say is that when we have been working more directly with the vendors, such as IBM, they've been on the ground for about the past month, and we have seen some progress from the work that they've been doing. A number of individuals who were in various states of stuckedness in the system have been able to sort of move through the system and get into coverage. I'm sorry, I didn't know how else to say that, but that's a good thing. We acknowledge that there still are others who are there, but I think the efforts that they've had have allowed us to sort of move through that. For example, one of the really key issues that we discovered with the site was that as individuals were coming into the system, we were having challenges with the eligibility determination aspect of it. That's really where the IBM Curum software was focused. And the metrics that they've been able to sort of provide to us showed that we've moved from around 80% of people moving in and having challenges or being able to move through that eligibility determination pretty cleanly to around 98% now who are able to move through that. So we're seeing some progress. It's still not enough, and it's still not fast enough, but it is progress in the right direction, and we are very hopeful that the work that Optum is able to do for us in looking more holistically at the entire system then will allow us to make even greater strides moving forward. One of the things that I want, you mentioned the call center work, and you also reemphasized the point that I made, which is that many of the challenges of the call center have been really related to the IT challenges. And as we improve the IT, the call center challenges will also likely lessen. However, we do want to make sure that we're doing everything we can to improve that process. We will be bringing on some additional staff. There's about a two-week run-up. This is a complex system. These aren't easy to just drop a person in and be able to have them perfectly answer calls day one. We do have a training period that they have to go through, and that's about a two and a half week that they need to do that. And so from a timing perspective, we're really looking at the end of the month before we'll be having, you know, fully additional bodies on the ground who will be trained and able to sort of lessen some of the burdens. But we felt it was important to get that started because we know that we're actually in a relatively down period, if you think about it, where there will be a ramp up as we move into March, and we want to make sure we have trained resources to be able to do that. With regards to the budgetary impacts, there will be some. I can't say that you can hire call centers and individuals without there being budgetary impacts. We can get you specifics on that. We don't have them today because we haven't fully landed on the numbers, but as we have them, we'll provide them to the committee because we think it's important for you to have that information. But there will be impacts. It'll be stuff that we'll deal with within our current budget, but we'll let you know what that looks like.
Senator Lurie?
A follow-up on that. You said that these additional call center staff will be trained up a two-week period. I mean, we're at the 10th of January. The 15th of January is still the deadline for February 1st coverage. And I know that, you know, a number of people didn't make it for January 1st coverage that are going to be looking for February 1st coverage. We're going to run into the same thing for March 1st and then April 1st as we roll up to the open enrollment period, the end of that. How many people are stuck in the system as of today and not being able to be moved through to the product that meets them and their needs and the needs of their family for coverage that begins February 1st?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lurie, I think this is sort of one of those good news, bad news scenarios. What we've on the good news side, we've moved a lot of people through who were in the system. We've been able, through the work of IBM and others, to be able to actually identify who those individuals are and get them through and into coverage. The bad news is that there still are people who are stuck. And one of the challenges that we've had, I can say, has been because of the complexity of the way the system is structured. There are challenges in actually getting really, really solid numbers to the question of who is stuck. And part of the reason for that is that we do know that individuals come in and they might look, they might establish an account and they might reach a certain point and decide not to go any further. That might be a person who's stuck in the system. It might be a person who's shopped and decided not to buy coverage right now. And so sorting through some of those things is we don't necessarily know the motivations of everyone who comes in the site. But we certainly hear from individuals, and we know there are certain individuals who have done enough of an effort that we understand that they are making an effort to try to get into coverage. We know that there are a number that are what we call pending. And people can pend for a variety of reasons. Some of them are actually very legitimate pends. So, for example, a person might come in, be determined eligible for or seeking coverage, and it looks like they may be eligible for medical assistance or Minnesota Care, but we actually need additional information from them to make that determination fully so that we have program integrity related to those individuals. So they pend until that information gets to us and we're able to make that determination. Others pend in the system because of the IT challenges. We think the majority of the people who are currently pending, and I'll be looking to staff from time to time, I hope you understand while I do that, and they may be more active than they'd like to be at times today in helping answer questions. We believe the majority of the pending people are actually ones who we're waiting for additional information from them. I'm not sure I actually got the confirmation I was hoping for on that, so yes.
Well, that pending issue, if you have, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Lights, if you have a mixed household and you're pended for Medicaid, I know one of the 21 issues was that entire mixed household would get hung up, and that's a really serious problem for families. I mean, we have, and I think that the letter outlined it well, we have a lot of mixed families because of our relatively generous packages for children in specific. And so if an additional piece of information is needed for one potentially Medicaid-eligible household, the entire household was getting pended and hung up. Has that one been resolved? I know there was 21 issues. I guess we're gonna need to get to how many of those issues have been resolved.
Mr. Chair, while someone comes up and tells me whether that specific issue has been resolved yet, well, here's what I can tell you more generally about the 21 issues
it's
that
issue
we
10.
Know. Issue 10. Thank you. I can actually look at that then. That is an issue that, to my understanding, has not actually been resolved within the system at this point. Here's what we know at this point in time. We had an extensive meeting with IBM on one of the nights this week, and that we went through item by item the 21 issues that we have to sort of get a status of what that felt like. And what we understand is that of the 21, approximately 6 have been resolved, fully resolved. There's a handful, approximately 7, that have not been resolved and for which there isn't currently a fix. And the remainder, which, if I did my math quickly, is something 8, maybe? Thank you. Of course, leave it to Senator Benson with her numbers mind. Are ones where there have been IT fixes that have been identified and are in a testing phase. And so we are not yet deploying those to the full site because we need to test them and assist in the system to ensure that they're stable and that they're doing what we anticipate they do and not causing problems elsewhere in the site. But that is sort of the status of what we know about that.
And Mr. Lights, on that, that was actually the issue that I wanted to ask you about. And I appreciate you guys have been terrific in terms of taking questions and responding to questions. I know that many of us have independently contacted you with questions and concerns. On the with the 21 issues, for anybody that hasn't followed that, those are the governor contacted IBM. Gentlemen, maybe you can supply the date, but it was within the last several weeks.
December 13, Mr. Chair.
And raised with IBM, who's our vendor, doing some of these technical issues, specific areas that he wanted to make sure were addressed. In response to that, IBM, I don't know how many people, but scores of IBM tech folks now are on the ground here in Minnesota, and as I understand it, the chief system architect is here too. But on those 21 concerns that were raised in the letter, do you have a sense then of, I think you said, Mr. Light, 6 resolved, 7 not yet resolved, and 8 IT fixes identified but not yet tested. Do you have a timeline, or is that an optimum, the folks that are doing the end-to-end? I'm just trying to get a sense. Are we coming out of the, and I won't hold you exactly to it, but are we 2 days away or are we 2 months away?
Mr. Chair, couple things. First of all, thank you for not holding me to the I want to, on the 6 versus 7 versus 8 question, that was sort of my recollection in my mind. I didn't actually go through my notes here, but I think that's right on that number, but allow me to give or take one or two on either side, but I think I gave you accurate numbers there. In terms of timeline, here's what I know about that. The testing process, anyone who sort of knows IT, and I'm learning a lot about it on a daily basis now, knows that the testing processes take actually a fairly extensive period of time because there are best standards in the industry, and they need and so it just simply takes time to test things as they put in fixes. What I understand from IBM is that we're talking on the order of more than 2 days. Probably closer than the 2 month zone that you're talking about, and somewhere probably a little bit less than that, maybe 4 to 6 weeks is maybe a timeline that we're talking about for putting in that series of fixes that is sitting in the testing phase right now.
Okay, and then gentlemen, and I expect I don't want to monopolize this, so I have one more quick question that I know other members have already indicated that they have questions as well. But we're really relying on agents and brokers to be sort of the front door for some of this, and I know that they're frustrated. I've heard directly from them with a couple of points that they've made. One is the idea of a broker portal. And again, Mr. Lights, I'm kind of like you. I'm not the most IT savvy in spite of my best efforts, but I believe that that would give them an entree into the Minsure site that would get them able to help people sooner. And they've talked about, you know, we're taking a couple weeks to train the call center folks. I think most of the agents and brokers were only given a couple hours. And frankly, I kind of, to some degree, understand that because the agents and brokers have an entire lifetime of work to rely on. They've got a lot of experience and background. But can you talk about training issues and specifically that broker portal and whether that's being worked up as well?
Mr. Chair, let me start by saying that I fully understand and appreciate and value the expertise that brokers bring. They for many, many years have been doing this work, and they've been getting people into coverage, and they bring a wealth of knowledge that we need to use, and we need to work with them in a much, much better way than we have, and we intend to do that moving forward. So I just want that on the record because I think that's important to indicate. They are valued partners in this, and we need to make sure that we fully utilize the expertise that they bring. I think they have been enormously gracious with their time and with their patience as we've been doing this. One of the things that will make it easier for them moving forward is the broker portal. But unfortunately, right now where we're at in the system right now is focusing on stabilizing the core system that we have, so that the issues that we have with the core system getting people into coverage right now are ones where we simply have to focus our resources in the short run to ensure that we improve that process. One of the things that I want to say, though, is that we do understand the need to have that portal available. I can assure you that it will be a high priority once we do get it to a more stabilized system, that will be an issue that we do want to address. And then secondly, that in the meantime, I think we're very committed, and I'm very committed to working with the brokers to determine ways in which we can make their lives better, easier, as they interact with MNsure. Because in the end, that's going to benefit consumers who are able to get into coverage sooner. So I think I want to make that commitment because I think that's very, very important to be able to work much closer with them than we've been able to this point.
And my final point is just a real quick point of clarification. You used a figure of 98% moving through the eligibility. And honestly, you sort of lost me in terms of it sounded like that number had been very low for a while. It's now at 98%. But 98. What are these 98% of people able to do?
Mr. Chair, thank you for giving me the opportunity to clarify that. So what I was referring to there is the system is built in a modular manner. So there's sort of the vendor. People come in through the site through a certain portal. They have then they move into one of the first areas that they move into is the eligibility determination portion of the site. And that's where IBM Curum has its work. They then move once that has determined, they move through to another vendor connector where additional plan selection and other things occurs down the road and ultimately ends up in payment. What I was referring to with the 98% was on that first part, when people come into the site and have an eligibility determination, what we initially found was that around 80% of the folks were able to, when IBM landed, around 80% of the folks were coming in and able to get through that, which means 20% were having challenges with that. When we look at it now, that number is more around 98% who are able to flow through. There's still a few individuals who are getting hung up in that area, but largely most everyone who comes in can flow through the eligibility and into other parts of the site.
Okay, and thank you. And that was my understanding from a number of folks that have contacted me, and I'm guessing others, is that was a big or a major point of, as you put it, stuckedness, I think is the – I'm sure that'll be the word of 2014, but that was based on – from just anecdotal evidence, the folks who were contacting me a lot were at that stage. Where they were just getting very frustrated. So it's good to hear that number still 2% less than where it needs to be, but it seems like it's moving the right direction. So thank you. I've got Senator Benson, Representative Hoppe, Representative Loeffler, and Representative Mack on the list. Senator Benson.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I must say, Commissioner Leitz, you have been incredibly responsive and transparent since you've taken this position, and I hope that we're seeing a culture change at MNsure with you in leadership. The fact that I got a packet of useful information in a timely manner is a significant sea change from where we were, so I want to thank you. And please know that any sharpness in questioning isn't due to actions that have happened since you've taken leadership. You've been very professional, so I want to thank you for that. With regard to the pending applications, I had a constituent call. His whole family was in pending status, but he got no indication of what he was supposed to do next and spent hours on the phone. And the stories that I'm sure everyone in the room has either experienced or has heard. And so what happens to those pending people? Are they being told now, this is the information that we're missing, or this part of your family can progress, but this part needs to take action? Just some clarity for them, and I know spending money on mailings is probably not going to help your budget at all, but can you fill me in a little bit? And I do have a few more questions if the chair will accommodate. Certainly.
Mr. Leitz, and members, by the way, for the sake of your for just basic edification, I'm combining, I think, Sections 4 and Section 5. So, gentlemen, if you have additional prepared remarks, can you tell me that now? I think, Senator Benson, your questions, my questions, Senator Lurie's, are all into those topics anyway. So unless anybody has an objection, I think what we'll do is we'll we'll put all of these together, and if Mr. Leitz or Chair Buettner have additional comments with respect to the items in Section 5, they're welcome to share those. And with that minor interruption, and my apologies for it, and I'll just keep talking for a little while longer for obvious reasons.
To keep you from vamping, Mr. Chair, I have no further prepared remarks on that particular topic.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Leitz, do you have a response to Senator Benson's question?
Mr. Chair and Senator Benson, one of the challenges that we've had is, and I've said this before in various venues, if there had been one particular challenge to the site, I think it would have been a heck of a lot easier for us to have fixed it and moved forward. And the challenge that we have is that people do get hung up in a number of different types of situations. And what I can tell you is the following. For individuals who were, for example, public program eligible, the vast majority of those individuals were reached out to by the Department of Human Services or MNSHR in whatever manner we could. Frankly, sometimes it was mailings. Sometimes it was a telephone call. Oftentimes it was a telephone call. And when we had an email address, we utilized that as well to reach out to them to alert them to where they were at in the status of the system and to move them through when they got back in contact with us. There were some individuals where we were at a state where we understood enough about them that we could sort of move them through regardless because we sort of understood where they were at in the system. With regards to APTC or the commercial side of things, we've done some similar types of things where when we had information about the individual and were able to retrieve that information from the system, we've actively reached out to them. So, for example, there was a group of individuals where premium tax credit calculated as zero incorrectly, meaning that they came in, they got an advanced premium tax credit calculation, it calculated wrong, and we learned that. I think that was around, Eric, was 1,100 or so individuals, something to that nature, a little over 1,000. We literally contacted each of them and phoned them on and said, come back on the site. We'll close out your case, and we'll have you come do a new clean application, and then we'll get you into coverage. There were also a number of people who were trapped in a portion of the site, in what is known as the PIE queue. It's P-I-E, and it stands for P something I something E something, and it's my level of knowledge of the system. These were individuals that this was an IBM Curium challenge, and we have been actively, literally on a daily basis, getting information out about them from the system, running data queries. That's one of the things that IBM has been extremely valuable on the ground in helping us do is run data queries against what we know in the system to get data out so that we can contact individuals. So the folks who are in the PIE queue were ones then there was a log of, I think, around 1,500 folks that we sort of moved out of that queue once we understood kind of what was going on and got them into coverage or through the system and into coverage. And then since they've been able to actually better understand what the challenges were with the PIE queue, we've been able to actually stop the inflow largely. I think there's a few people who've let run up. So that was kind of a long answer to your question, but I think those are the efforts that we're trying to take to reach out to those individuals.
And if I
thank you,
may
Senator Benson.
Continue, Mr. Chair, thank you. You mentioned Optum's coming in. Do you have a contract with them? Is that posted so that it can be reviewed?
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, we do have a contract with them. It's a no-cost contract, so there's no cost to the work that they're doing for this initial review. As to whether the contract has been posted yet, It's done. I guess we're checking to see whether it's been posted or not fully.
Okay. Thank
Senator
you,
Benson.
Mr. Chair. And with regard to, again, the Optum is no cost, but you're adding staff to the call centers. We've talked a little bit about the budget. You were kind enough to supply some basic information about where your budget's at now, and it's looking pretty rough. And so I'm wondering if either you or Chair Buettner can point us to how you're going to solve that budget problem while you continue to add staff in an attempt to fill this service hole.
Mr. Leitz.
Mr. Chair and Senator Benson, what we provided to you, I think, in the information we provided back were are the expenditure budget and the resource budget and then the various enrollment scenarios. And I think, as you correctly pointed out can't recall if it's a letter or in a phone conversation we had, that we had a number of scenarios that were in the fiscal note from last year and provided those, as well as what we tried to do is to break out what our current enrollment scenarios look like give you a sense of kind of where we're at relative to those various scenarios. And I think is what we showed is that we're running right now at about 85% of the low scenario with our current enrollment trends. What we don't know is what this next 3 months is going to look like. It's hard to predict, obviously. We do anticipate that, obviously, we'll be seeing an upswing in enrollment in March. The degree to which we anticipate will be at least as large as we've seen for January coverage, simply because of the requirement by March that we get folks in. I think a lot of our efforts in between now and then are going to be ensuring that we have effective processes to get those folks into coverage, whether that's electronically or manually, if need be. With regards to where the budget will be then developing, you know, with that budget relative to what our resources coming in versus that, we will have to make decisions as we move forward then around kind of resource allocation, what our budget is going to be, what we know about enrollment, and where we have to either improve our budgetary situation from a expenditure perspective, what things might not we be able to do because we are not able to bring in the resources necessarily, depending on what enrollment looks like. So those are decisions that will need to be made moving forward.
Thank you, Mr. Leitz. Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, if I could ask Chair Buettner to address, even in the low enrollment scenario, it looks like Minsure loses money every year. And so there must be some strategic view as to how you're going to solve that problem.
Chair Buettner.
Chair Atkins, Senator Benson, I appreciate the question. It's a question we've been asking as a board, both privately and in public, since day one, which is structurally the way that this budget has been put together. The vast majority of our resources go toward the public program enrollees, who are the most people that we serve, while the vast majority of our revenue is slotted to come from the qualified health plan through the premium withhold. There's always been a structural issue there. It's been on our list as a board to dive into it. As you rightly point out, Senator Benson, it really becomes to a forefront in 2015. And so it's on our list to understand how can we do that. The issues that we keep raising is within the statutory framework that you laid out in passing the enabling statute, we have all other alternatives, whether it's working with DHS to understand how their contract with Minsure works and are they getting the appropriate value and are we getting the appropriate reimbursement for the services we're doing. There are other alternatives to bring in other revenues. And to be blunt, those haven't been addressed yet, and they need to be addressed.
Mr. Chair?
Can I, if it's all right, Senator, can I just, have you updated your projections? I just saw the graph. It looks like towards the end of the year it sort of did a hockey stick where it was like this for a while and then took a big bounce up at the end of the year. But are there any updated projections, or is it just too soon to do that? And thank you for the opportunity. Chair Buettner.
Chairman Atkins, to be blunt and honest, the data you're looking at is data I have not yet seen, so it's still in process, obviously, of being worked through as we see enrollment come in and as Scott and his team start revising projections based on what you see. So,
okay. Thank you. And my apologies,
thank
Senator
you.
Benson. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, that was just fine. I'm not aware of additional revenue sources. I followed the bill pretty closely, and there's a premium withhold, and there's a transfer to accommodate public programs. Are you saying you're getting more money from DHS, or are you going to up the limit on the withhold? Because the numbers I see have the withhold at the statutory maximum. You get a reserve coming out of current year and carrying forward to cover some of the shortfalls, but the reserve carry forward runs out rather quickly. Mm-hmm. So if there's another revenue source, I think the legislature might need to speak to that.
Chair Atkins, Senator Benson.
Senator Lurie.
That's a very good question, and a corollary to it that maybe you can address in your answer is, I mean, are you thinking of coming to the legislature for some of those additional revenue sources, I think is kind of where we're...
Yep, Senator Lurie, I appreciate the amendment to the question because it's spot on. It's the questions that we as a board are asking. It is not our intent to come to the legislature and ask for additional funds. What I was referring to, Senator Benson, is in the statutory language, there is a category called other. It's completely undefined that says we have the ability to seek other sources. I can't tell you what those sources are. Do they come from the community? Do they come from other things? I think there is a prohibition on advertisement from health carriers. But beyond that, there is an opening there to say we should be creative. We should figure out ways that if Minnesotans are benefiting from this system, how can we generate revenue from the benefits that we're creating?
And Senator Benson, I'm guessing that you still have more questions. If it's all right, we've just got a number of folks. If we can do sort of a round robin and circle back to you, would that be okay?
That's fine. I just the statute. I think donations and things like that are the other sources. But there was a mention of a change to the DHS contract. And
yeah, I can address it.
Legislatively, we need to keep an eye on that.
Okay. And I think at this point they said they don't have any intention of coming to the legislature. Senator Benson, I'm not ending your line of questioning as much as I am just giving other people an opportunity.
And Chair Atkins, I know that Representative Hoppe and I have talked about a lot of things, and we will circle back to that. But I want to be clear with the board chair, just because he doesn't intend to come to the legislature doesn't mean he shouldn't come to the legislature. This organization has been given unprecedented latitude, and it hasn't worked out very well. And so I think it would be wise to engage us early if you need something.
Absolutely.
And I was just going to skip over Representative Hoppe, if that's all right with members.
That's why I had my hand up again.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Benson and Senator Lurie, an addendum to your question, I think the other source, we should make sure that we're not going to have people paying increased premiums as we go forward as a way to cover costs here. I don't know if Chair Buettner wants to address that.
And gentlemen, if I can add on to that, I think it's a great question, but my understanding anyway, and confirm this, is part of the issue is that we've got the lowest rates of anybody, and that's somehow impacting what the budget is. Chair Buettner, maybe you can further that.
Chair Atkins, Representative Hoppe, that's exactly some of the issue is the statute was based upon, as you rightly point out, Representative Hoppe, the premium withhold on that commercial insurance. To the extent that it's a fixed rate times the premiums, to the extent that the premiums are the lowest in the country and significantly lower than anybody anticipated, and to that I certainly applaud the efforts of our community partners in the plans and the providers to make that available, it impacts a lower revenue. You know, it's simple math. To your question, we've heard numerous times, I personally have heard from numerous sources the exact sentiment you expressed, which is I don't want to see more taxes on those who are in the system. They're much like Senator Benson said. If that's the only alternative we have, I certainly want to have that discussion before we ever came up to the Hill for that. Like I said, my personal, and this is only my personal, I'm not speaking for the board, is I'd like to resolve our own issues in-house without having to reach out for more funds, whether it's direct funds from legislature or changing that withhold rate, as you alluded to, Representative Hoppe, because I think it's something that we can do internally first.
And if I may,
Senator Benson,
I thought I remembered that there was a federal cap on the withhold, and I was wondering if council could take a moment to... It doesn't have to be right now, but there's something out there that makes me think there's a federal cap on the withhold.
Council will look for that. And Representative Hoppe, other questions?
Yeah, a number of questions, Mr. Chair. And since we're on this, Mr. Chair when we're talking about the lowest rates in the country, are we talking about the whole state of Minnesota or just the metro area?
Chair Atkins, Representative Hoppe, when I euphemistically call about the lowest rates in the country, it's on average across the state. What we have seen, and it's not news to anybody in this room or anybody who's been following it, is we have significant diversity of cost across the state depending on the nature of the providers, the nature of the contracts that the plans have in different regions within the state. That added transparency, to my mind, is very enlightening, and it's helping all policymakers understand what's happening in the health insurance market across this state. Yep, there are pockets. Southeastern Minnesota, the Arrowhead, have higher rates than the Twin Cities, and we can all look to see some of the structural reasons there are for that. Not necessarily something that us as a conduit and exchange can drive, but that's part of our discussion is can we do something to help that? Are there solutions that other agencies or the legislature should be addressing to equalize those rates across all Minnesotans so all Minnesotans can see the benefit of those lower rates?
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're talking about 70,000 enrollees. That's the number we keep talking about here. Mr. Chair, can you tell me how many of those 70,000 enrollees did not have insurance, health insurance, before MNsure?
Chair Buettner.
Chair Atkins, Representative Hoppe. No, we don't collect that data right now. Mr. Leitz has referred to, part of the thing is developing our resources and what data we collect. And this goes back to decisions made before, quite frankly, any of us were here as far as setting up the exchange and the data elements required to create that. We followed the federal standard, which didn't ask for at the time of enrollment, do you have previous care? What I can tell you is from the nature of the process, the 1-1 date is driving more people who currently have coverage to seek replacement coverage. In other words, folks who currently have coverage saw, I can get better rates, better coverage through the exchange, and they came in early to replace what they have. If I'm an individual who does not currently have coverage, the 1-1 date is a less of a hard deadline because they're not giving up a current coverage to replace it with new ones. So I fully expect and anticipate that in the second half of open enrollment, we will see more people coming into the system who previously did not have coverage.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'd like to, Mr. Leitz, thank you for being here. Thank you for the information you got to represent or to Senator Benson. I appreciate it. I do like the new area of disclosure and cooperation and help. And I'm going to ask, I think, some tough questions, but I think it's all important for all of us and our colleagues that aren't here to remember that whether we like this or don't like this, we have a lot of people now that are trying to get insurance. And I'm glad to hear that you're working with the plans. I'm glad to hear that you're working with everybody in order to get this thing to work so that we can get people insured. And, Mr. Chair, we had nice young lady with the cute baby that was here to start things off who has insurance. And I just wanted to have an email from somebody who is having some issues. I won't read the whole thing. I'll just read essentially the first and second paragraphs. I have been persistently trying to obtain health insurance through the MNsure website. I still don't have health insurance. I started October 1st. My former health insurance ended at the end of December. My wife and I no longer have health insurance. This is from a gentleman that's 62 years old. I won't go through all the details. He ends it by saying, I sincerely hope that when your oversight committee convenes, you consider the ongoing problems that people are continuing to experience with MNsure. And, Mr. Chair, I got that in my – it's not from a constituent of mine. It's from somebody in Minnesota. I got that this morning. And I'm not sure who else. Maybe we all got it on the committee. I don't know. But I'm glad what we're doing, and we're talking about all the things that are being worked on and the progress that's being made. And as I said, it's incumbent upon all of us to want this to succeed because it's what we're stuck with. Having said that, Mr. Buettner, when we start talking about some of the things that went on before, we've just in the last couple of days, the public has become aware that there was a change in the contract for the software vendor. You know, it hasn't been really clear to me, and I hope it's clear to you. I'd like to know who made that decision, who okayed that, who had some oversight of MNsure or admin or commerce or DHS or the governor's office. I don't know who made that decision, but I think the members of this committee have a right to know that.
And Mr. Chair Buettner, and for the sake of folks, I believe that gentleman lives in Kensington, and his issue has been now referred to the folks at Minshew, just to make sure we take care of every single individual in Minnesota.
Yep, and that's why I said I didn't know who was all copied on that. Yeah. I know Tara or Representative Mack and I got it because we share in L.A., and that was what I was going to do after this is give it to you and have it.
Just in case he's watching in Kensington right now, I want him to know that his email got into the right hands of the folks at Minshew. But Chair Buettner to the question.
That's thankful. Chair Atkins, Representative Hoppe. The system that we stepped into in the board is very unique. 95% of this thing was built before we showed up on the ground in May. We didn't assume authority and have any ability to take actions until the end of October, or excuse me, the end of August. Direct answer to your question is, I do not know. You know, you're talking to the wrong people sitting at this table. Those are decisions made before we came on board. Our job as a board is to provide leadership and oversight. Take to you, as you said, what we're stuck with. The hand that we have been dealt is what we're trying to improve upon and make sure going forward. Direct answer to your question is, I do not know.
Well, Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair, I think I'm speaking for everybody on the committee that it would be nice to know who okayed this. And if there's somebody here from Commerce or Administration, I mean, we have a contract, it was changed. We were told, and this is from the July 22nd meeting, we got this from Minshew update, July 22nd of last year, right on the top, it says Maximus. So if they changed the contract before this, and then told us that it was still Maximus and didn't let us know what was going on, I have a little hard time with that. And I think we have a right as an oversight committee to know what happened, who okayed that, who signed off on this. And I don't know if we want to get individually people up here from Commerce, people up here from the Department of Administration, but I think we should find out what happened and who okayed it.
And I agree.
If I may, Chair Atkins, Representative Hoppe, I think that's a very valid question. It's a question we ask. And it's a matter of, to my opinion, it's the information that we're given as directors overseeing the operation, the legislative oversight, providing leadership and direction to us. The history of information out of the organization has been correct but not clear. That's a perfect example of that example. Maximus still is, when you look at the overarch, they are the prime IT vendor. And when you draw it on a diagram like that, they have direct contractual responsibility for those subcontractors. So I would not think that there's any inaccuracy in what, you know, what you're referring to is a document that was provided to us as a board in July to help us understand the structure of things. That's accurate, but to your question, it doesn't really get at the, well, what's really going on? What was presented to us at that time was exactly that, is here's our IT contractors, here's how they lay out, and Minshew has the responsibility for that general oversight and that general project management. So they were describing to us in July the current state of affairs at that point in time. To your point, the decision to change that was before any of us here were involved, your committee included.
Mr. Chair, to facilitate, perhaps there's someone from MMB would have been responsible in February.
And that's entirely possible. I want to, before we get rid of these guys sitting in the
I don't think it's a get rid of. I think it's an addendum. I'd like to see them at the
fine.
Table.
And Representative Hoppe, what I would suggest, by the way, is whether we have somebody here or not, I think it would be helpful to have sort of an overview and a walkthrough of the chronology of who the vendors were and when. We've received, I think everybody got that document that I received yesterday and then forwarded on to all of you from Maximus. That laid out from their perspective what their role was.
Right.
But it would be helpful, I think, to have that, Mr. Lights, from your side of the table or from whoever was under control of it at the time, perhaps that's through MMB or Commerce. And I'm not suggesting we're going to walk past that. I just want to, if there's other questions for Mr. Lights or Mr. Buettner, while they're sitting there, Representative Hoppe, let's walk through those now and then we'll venture into the issue of whether or not we've got folks here from MMB or Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one other question, and I've asked this, I think, at every meeting we've had, and Mr. Lights, I appreciate the new way of looking at things, but I guess at the end of the day, there's no way to know this for sure because things change, but are we going to have enough people enrolled in the commercial market to make this viable? And I know we kind of touched on it with where we're going to get other money, but I think that's a pretty key question. And, you know, we can't be certain about projections, but it'd be nice to know if the projections say this thing is going to fly as is or not.
Mr. Lights?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hoppe, and of course, you're right with the, because we're projecting into the future, but we're doing everything that we can at this point in time to do two things: improve the system that people can get into coverage, to ensure that we have enrollment numbers that are sustainable, and if they can't, to get them enrolled via other means. And so to your question, I mean, the answer is we believe absolutely we will, and that it will, but I think we also acknowledge along the way that there are some bumps in front of us in getting there from here.
Okay. And Representative Hoppe, if it's all right, I've got Representative Loeffler and Representative Mack also on the list, and I'm not taking you off, but like I did with Senator Benson, just kind of rotating through if we might.
Sure.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to say that I appreciated in your opening remarks that both of you really acknowledged the strong role of the partners in getting us to the successes of to date and to problem solving the problems as they continue to evolve. But I don't hear, and maybe it's just my listening, I don't hear that same partnership in the problem solving and the strategy moving forward. And it's really easy when you start with something new to feel like you're the new kid on the block and you're inventing the world and all the responsibilities on you and you need to do it all. But I think your job is actually to orchestrate all the resources that we have to maximize the efficiency of the partners, not just the system, and to recognize their needs. And I can't believe that, and I know nothing about Optum other than what I read in the paper this morning, but I suspect they have not and will not in their 3 days have a chance to sit down and talk with, you know, navigators and brokers and county employees and DHS employees and insurance company people to find out on their end what the priorities are, where the bottlenecks are, which are very different than the people who in the call center are dealing with your IT issues. And I don't think there's going to be a comprehensive solution until we have a comprehensive bringing together of all the partners and what their wisdom and insights, as well as what they can offer. And I'd like to better understand what that engagement is on the problem solving, because I think, as Senator Lurie said, all of them are got people working time and a half, weekends, doing all that they can, but that's probably not sustainable. And so we need to sustain our partners as well as our own stuff. So if you can tell me a little bit more about what's going on the problem solving with that network that we have so benefited from in the past.
Mr. Lights?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, first of all, I couldn't agree with you more that the system is only going to work to the extent that we maximize the involvement, engagement, and problem-solving skills and partners across the spectrum. I tried to give a special shout out to a number of groups who we know have been doing a lot of work on the front end of my remarks, and it was very much because I think that we need to absolutely seek their increased engagement in the system, but more importantly, I think seek their advice about how we actually can make it the best that we possibly can. So I'll use the example of the health plans as one example, but I'll also use another example with the navigator groups. Over the course of the last month, we've literally been meeting on a daily basis with the health plans for ranging from 1 to 4 hours, depending on the day and depending on the topics that we had to solve. And it was for a very practical reason. As we were running up to December 31st, we needed to ensure that we had every system in place to be able to actually make sure that they had the information about enrollment, so that when a person enrolled, that they had got their card, that they were seen as being covered in the plan system, and the transfer of that information. That greatly improved our ability to put in place processes that ensured that that happened. The plans brought to the table a lot of resources and a lot of really smart people who were thinking about this and really creatively helped us get there from here. Similarly, we need to fully engage the navigator community and the broker community, the counties, and others. And the reason is that we have regular meetings with the navigators and with the navigator community. And what we've learned is that they bring up challenges to us that we either didn't fully understand that they are encountering as roadblocks and have suggested ideas around how to get around those. That's how we're going to get there from here, is to engage on a regular, structured basis the various parties that we know interact with consumers on a daily basis. One of my a high priority for me is to improve those relationships, to make those relationships strong, and to actively seek in a structured way input from those either organizations or groups of individuals who interact with folks that we want to get into coverage. So I couldn't agree with your comments more. I can do I have the roadmap of exactly how that looks today? No, but can I tell you that we're going to have that engagement process moving forward? Absolutely, and it'll be one that we think will be pretty darn important to us achieving our goals.
Now, folks, by the way, Senator Benson had to step out for just a minute, so when she comes back, will you kind of stick with the – I'm going to tell her that we already called on her for her second question since she was gone. So, I'm sorry, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Leitz, for that. I really do think it's broader than just a periodic meeting. I think it's as intense a relationship as you're having and describing with the health plans in terms of at least some of the partners, not all. Navigators may not be that person, but I think there's some others that could assist in that. The other thing is I would ask you to be more creative in your problem solving. The response to the call center demand was, well, we'll go out and we'll outsource some call center employees who've never maybe worked with insurance, never worked with public programs, never worked with anything complicated on computers. And we're going to spend 2 weeks training them and hope that it all works. And yet we know that about 2/3 of the enrollees, and as was projected, qualify for Minnesota Care, which is our program for working modest income people, as well as medical assistance. Those programs have existed forever. They have the worst computer systems in the world. They're 1970s with a 1990 update. And I bet there are just thousands of retired county employees who did that work, who might be willing to fill in for a month or two as just a little extra money after some of them's retirement hasn't done as well as they thought. And they would actually come in with some real insight and knowledge about how do you get someone eligible into these programs and who would understand the terminology of the systems we're dealing with. And so I would just say I think that that kind of creative engagement with your partners may actually lead you to identifying resources that may not be as easily or skillfully available in the private sector, and yet may be able to better, more quickly deal with it. The other thing I would suggest is that you also look at whether or not you should stop our current publicity and really rethink that, which is a whole different issue than IT. I have been a critic at earlier meetings, and I remain a critic of the media operation and its purchasing. As I drove here from Minneapolis, I heard the intro to a program on national security with a speaker who was sponsored by Minsure. I'm not sure that many small businesses not offering health insurance or individuals without insurance were listening to that program over their lunch hour. At least two people on my block, I think that's how many, subscribed to the Star Tribune. Full-page ads on that publication isn't going to help those two households that I know are fully insured. And so I really do think that as we're looking at budget things, we should not be using ineffective vehicles and instead be really targeting the audience that this program is designed for, which is, to me, the goal is not to have the best computer system in the world. It is to continue Minnesota's tradition of having the lowest rate of people who are uninsured in the nation. And we're only going to do that when we target all our resources at the uninsured, which means old-fashioned things like posters in park buildings and schools. It means not just everything being high-tech. And I think as we're looking at cost overruns, one of the things that this is an area where I feel like you can cut back and rethink, and you may find some more cost-effective and more effective ways to get to the audience that we really need to get to. And so I would really like you to not just deal with the IT issue, but to deal with your outreach. I think a lot of the navigators and the outreach groups know how to reach the uninsured, but they can only reach a teeny tiny part, and your publicity resources, to me, have not been deployed effectively.
Senator Lori, to that point, and then Representative Mack.
To that point, to add to it, the real need to reach out to our partners is one that has been highlighted many times, and it relates directly to some of the points I was making earlier, how we've relied on them to bring in resources to help us through this. I mean, in fact, it's DHS that hired a county liaison to help with the MNsure issues. It's DHS that hired a navigator liaison to help with MNsure issues. It's, you know, it's Assistant Commissioner Lights from DHS who's come over and taken over the CEO role. Mr. Buettner, MNsure really has to take these community partners much more seriously and embrace them. And we are right now with this system relying on those partners. And we can't continue to do that. They're very, very strained. I was listening to part of the board meeting yesterday and found out that, you know, our navigator partners haven't even been paid yet. And they're putting in tremendous amount of work to help individuals get through this system, and it's really hard to keep them engaged, mm-hmm. and we really need to respect them, ask for their input, work through it with MNsure, and I know there's changes there, and I just really need to stress that point of working with our partners to make this come together.
And Senator Benson to that point, and then Representative Loeffler to her original point. Senator Benson.
To that point, there are other community partners in the plans and the broker community Absolutely. Who have put their staff, you know, restricted vacation, put them on overtime, said do whatever it takes to make this work, to fill all the gaps when they tried and tried and tried for months to say these are the problems we see, they're coming. They tried it during the legislative process. They tried all summer. And then in the end, when the world started falling apart, instead of walking away and letting it collapse, they dug in and fixed it. And so we need to get things right, and we need credit where credit's due. They don't get paid anymore for having staff work double overtime on Christmas Eve.
And Representative Loeffler.
Well, and just to echo that point, but I do think we're at risk of losing something that's really important to the whole state and that those of us who serve on the Health and Human Services Committee have looked forward to for a long time, which is streamlining and modernizing the eligibility systems for our public programs. With federal dollars through this window, small window of opportunity, paying for most of that, and all the effort it feels like that was to go towards modernizing and upgrading and making it actually work efficiently rather than it taking 18 months to train a typical financial worker to have prowess on our old systems. That work is being set aside so people can handle manual efforts and workarounds. And we've got to make up that time somehow because the deadlines will approach at which we will no longer qualify for the enhanced federal money to pay for the upgrades to make our service system in 87 counties effective. And so we have to be able to not just solve the problems, but we have to make up time as you put together the solutions. And I know these aren't easy, but you have to look at the impact on all the systems, not just the processing. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. And Representative Mack, thank you for your patience. I think you've been on the list now for something like an hour and 15 minutes. So appreciate your patience.
Almost Representative Mack. As long as MNsure holds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If we just had that drum set in here, Michelle, I'll tell you.
Representative Mack. Several questions, but I'm just going to prioritize the ones on some clarifying questions on what's been said so far and then see where we go from there. For Mr. Buettner, I guess one of my first questions is on a follow-up to Representative Hoppe. Just to clarify, did you know about the change in contract that was discussed earlier? And if so, when did you know about that?
Ms. Buettner?
Chairman Atkins, Representative Mack. I think I probably became aware of it as you became aware of it. As I said in response to Representative Hoppe's question, by the time the board was appointed and starting to learn, which is before we accepted authority, it was presented as a done deal. In other words, here's what the IT vendors do, here's their role, here's Minsure's role. And the fact that it had changed over time was never brought up to us, and whether it's deemed relevant or not relevant, don't know. Like I said, those are the cards we were dealt, and those were the roles in the place.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, and I guess just, you know, there's obviously been changes over the last few weeks, but I think it just raises a good point in terms of the communication, the questions that do get asked, and what is brought to light, you know, over the holidays and stuff. I hope you've known about this a little bit longer than I have, because I've just started to pay attention to this contracting piece in the last couple of days. I've been paying attention to some other things. But it does raise some significant concerns, and I'm sure we'll have ongoing questions and really trying to get to the bottom of that and who made that decision and why you didn't know about it sooner, as I think you should have if you didn't. My other question is a couple connected questions. In your opening statements, Mr. Buettner, you talked about the 70,000 people signed up with more affordable care. And I'm wondering if you could qualify that statement a little bit. Would you say that all of the 70,000 people signed up are paying less now than they ever have in the past? It's more affordable based on the statement you made.
And Representative, was that for Mr. Lights? Or I just
Mr. Buettner, just to his statement.
Chair Buettner.
Chair Atkins, Representative Mack, my assumption, it's an assumption based on somebody buying new coverage, back to Representative Hoppe's question of if they didn't previously have insurance, well, certainly they're paying more now. If they previously did have insurance, I'm assuming it's better insurance or they wouldn't have purchased it. We are operating, you know, in a free market, and I assume if people are buying, it's because either they didn't have access to it before, so that comparison is really in a posit, or they did have previous coverage and it's better coverage.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Buettner, I guess with all, you know, due courtesy, I guess I was, first of all, I was impressed with the first person that testified today, and it was refreshing because I have not honestly heard a lot of great stories yet for people that are saying it's more affordable, my premiums have gone down. I mean, that whole story, that's the first time I've heard a complete story like that of enrollment, paying less, and it was really great to hear. I really think Minsure could do a better job of bringing those good stories to light. We as legislators a lot of times just hear what goes wrong. And so I guess you saying, I assume that they're getting better coverage, better plans, I wouldn't assume that at all. I've heard radically on the other side of the issue, and it's concerning for my constituents, people that, yes, they bought a plan that they could buy, but only because one that they liked better before was canceled. And I know that that's beyond the scope of the board. That's a product of the federal federal mandates and things like that. But I think what people get frustrated with is they hear public statements on the news and coverage tonight on the news saying people have more affordable care, and they hear us saying that, and we're accountable for the words that we say in these rooms. And for so many people, that's simply not the case. Their premiums are going up. They don't have as good of coverage, and they just have no choice because what they had before, what was working for them before, is no longer an option. So I think people just get frustrated with the optics and what they hear and then what they're seeing in reality. Because like I said, the vast majority of people that I am hearing from are seeing their premiums going up and are paying for things that they don't need. And again, I don't put that necessarily on your lap. That's things that came far before you. But I just think how we talk about it creates a perception for the public, and then they get confused and very frustrated. In line with that, you know, one thing we talked about was the revenue concerns and the budget issues. And one thing that you said, Mr. Buettner, was that we have some of the best rates in the country and, you know, the low rates here. However, it's my understanding, as I've looked at comparisons from this year over last year, rates are higher this year across the board for the average person than they were last year. So, again, I think we can tout the lowest rates in the country. However, I think it's important to keep in mind for the average person, they're higher now than they were a year ago. They don't care where we stand in the country. All they care about is their bottom line and what they paid last year versus what they're having to pay this year. And that's very concerning when they were sold a different story 6 months ago, 2 years ago, whatever the case might be. And so my question to that then is, you made a comment that the lower premiums are affecting revenue. And I have to be honest, I don't always understand the minutia of how these rates affect premiums and affect the revenue coming into Minshew and how that flows, and explaining your comment there, because it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because I understand projections on the budget that was set for Minshew were based on numbers that would tell a different story, and I don't understand why those rates affect how well Minshew does with your budget.
Chair Atkins, Representative Mack, points very well taken about the industry structure. Obviously, the federal ACA has created new sets of insurance, new rules, and that's affecting the pricing overall. Absolutely, that's the milieu in which we work. We're not setting rates. We are merely a conduit for those who are, and I think your point is well taken, is not just comparing to what's out there today, but what was out there in the past and the trends we see in the future. Specifically about Minshew and our projections and how our revenue works, our revenue is a multiplication of the premium withhold times the premium rate. So take, if you use the maximum 3.5% and somebody has a $200 premium, it's going to be $70 or $7, if I do my math right, of income to Minshew to operate the exchange. So to the extent that one of those number changes, i.e. the premium, comes down, we get less revenue. And the projections that we were shown as a board, and I think you were shown as a committee, and certainly in considering the legislation, assumed higher premium rates than we actually saw. And so that's where we talk about the revenue shortfall coming from, based on projections. The projections were the cost trend in health insurance was going to continue to go up. We've seen that trend moderate in the rates that have been presented to our consumers for this year. One other thought that I just want to keep everybody in mind in this room is, we're talking about 2015 and 2016 projections. We don't know what the rates will be in 2015. I hope they don't go up significantly, but to the extent that they do, that's another issue that impacts revenue, or to the extent that they drop further, it may impact revenue.
And to that point, does anybody remember Ms. Gagner, when she came up and testified at the outset, did she say that her existing – because I'm frankly used to having my health insurance go up by double digits every gall darn year. But did she say it was her existing rate was like $450 a month and it was dropping to $192?
I just remember the baby.
Yeah, and who can blame you? But I just – does anybody remember – and I think we did let her leave, obviously. But
it was roughly $200 a month that I heard her say the same thing.
Over her existing coverage, though,
correct.
Right? Or under her existing coverage, I guess is what I should say. And that's just one anecdote. I'm not disputing that the average rates may be up, but I was just trying to remember if that was off an existing policy or one that she had. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no,
Representative Mack.
No, point well made. One other question that I have then in regards to how those rates are set, and we're talking about funding going forward. I would hope, and I guess any comments that either of you have to make in terms of, I don't know when budgeting starts happening and when you kind of start to set that budget and best case scenario to try to fix what at this point looks to be a pretty tenuous budget situation. I would hope that we're going to work off of worst case scenario, which is actually a best case scenario for Minnesota citizens, and that is that rates will stay as low as they are, maybe even drop. And so I would, I don't know what the planning process is from here on out. I can't say, and again, I've got a great deal of confidence just from the first few weeks, Mr. Lights, that hopefully there will be a little bit more of a long-term strategic plan that I think was missing before. I remember in a board meeting I listened to from September, it was pretty clear from the former director that really there was a six-month plan, and beyond that, there wasn't a whole lot in the queue, and 6 months from September is March. And so obviously this is, you're just coming into this, Mr. Lights, but I certainly hope that there's a much more long-term strategic plan based on worst-case scenarios for those numbers. I think a lot of these concerns were raised last spring, and the fact that, the gross premiums withhold was going to be a concern, and Minnesotans were sold again that it was going to be 1.5%, that should do the trick, and I think it's pretty much unanimous, and a lot of people have agreed there's no way that's going to cover the deal, as many of us were concerned and thought it wouldn't 6 months ago. And so I'm just, in general hoping for, I think people would rather, including the Oversight Committee, including Minnesota citizens, would rather be under-promised and over-delivered, which would be a big change from what the course has been thus far. And so I'm hoping as those decisions get made going forward that that's the case.
Thank you, Representative Mack. And I believe that Senator Hayden, who's on the – Senator, are you still on the phone with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right. I think we've put a microphone – you look splendid today, by the way. We've got a microphone right above the – so maybe if your question is short, I'll just repeat it back to make sure that folks have heard it. But go ahead with your question, Senator.
Good. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a brief question. It occurred to me in Chair Buettner's opening statements he talked about – and we've been talking about this today, overall, the capacity of the organization based on the challenges that it is facing. And so a specific question to Chair Buettner is, does he feel like the makeup of the board is adequate for the types of decisions that they have to make? And I will end with just saying that it occurs to me that maybe there might be an opportunity to look at the makeup of the board. I know that I've been somewhat challenged around the what I think is a lack of insight from a lot of the folks that Representative Laughlin was talking about, who actually need the uninsured population, people of color, and others having the adequate representation on the board is really a lot of my motivation. But since he mentioned it, Mr. Chair, I wanted to see if Mr. Buettner can give us his opinion on if he thinks that their board has the adequate amount of people and capacity to make those decisions.
Okay. And Chair Buettner, is there anybody in the room who wasn't able to hear that well enough? Just raise your hand. Otherwise, I won't repeat it then. Mr. Chairman, if you heard the question.
I certainly did. Chair Atkins, Senator, excuse me. I'm really impressed with our board. You know, we are seven individuals who were thrown together by the governor, never worked together, never met together, come from a wide variety of backgrounds and experiences. I will certainly acknowledge that you are correct. We don't have anybody other than the commissioner who deals with public programs on a daily basis who's experienced working with public programs. We, you know, certainly when you're talking about seven board members, you're not going to get a representative from every unique situation that we face as a board. That's part of the reason why we formed pretty broad and deep advisory committees. There are 34 other individuals that we reach out to on a regular basis to get input on decisions and to raise issues with us. And we specifically put in their charters and discussed with those advisory committees that it's a two-way street. This is not a committee that we just convene and say, what do you think about X? But we fully expect them to raise issues that we may not see, much the same way that Representative Loeffler talked earlier about working in partnership with various different agencies, with organizations who are beneficiaries of MNsure, and they have a different viewpoint and help inform us. We actively are open to that. And like I said, I know every single board member has spent time outside of board meetings meeting with various communities. Personally, I think very few have turned down people who've reached out and said, hey, we'd like to talk to you and like to get more information to you and to the board for your decision-making process.
Thank you, Chair Buettner. Senator Hayden, any follow-up? And give me just a second, Senator. We turn your volume all the way up before you speak. Go ahead.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging me. And Chair Buettner, I can appreciate you defending your board, and I most certainly can appreciate the plethora of experience. So it wasn't an attack on the skill set that is at the board, but it appears to me, since you think that you have what you need, it appears to me that we don't have anyone at the table, at the board level, not the subcommittee level and others, but at the board level, that really represents the interest, in particular, not of just low-income Minnesotans, there's some there that may understand that, but of people of color. And so when we look at the numbers of people that are uninsured by ethnic demographic, we know that African-Americans, Latinos, American Indians and others, and I know they have a particular kind of carve-out in this issue, but in others have not been very well represented. And quite frankly, Mr. Buettner, I haven't heard of a lot of people coming into these communities. Now, I don't know every single meeting that one has, and people don't report back to me every time they've had a meeting, but the information that I get from constituents and providers and folks that are working in these communities still don't feel has that they're connected. We appreciate some of the outreach dollars that have gone out and the process that went there. But kind of less that, some of the navigator dollars, I don't necessarily feel like we have the kind of impact from these communities. So, you know, maybe that's much more of a statement, Mr. Chair, but I do think for the group and for the public that maybe it is time for us to take a good look at the board that we put together and make sure and have a conversation with the administration to ensure. And it really kind of spurred from Representative Loeffler's conversation that we are being very creative, that we're not being protectionist, we're not protecting the status quo, but we're being as creative as possible to get out into these communities and to make sure that people who are eligible and that are uninsured are signing up. And the conversation on the comments that Representative Loeffler made just about our advertising budget, you know, it still seems to be problematic to me that we're kind of going down the road. Now, maybe contractually we have to do that, but we're going down the road and we're not reaching our target population as effectively as we could. And so with that, I think that that's something that the group, the Oversight Committee, and frankly the legislature needs to think about. I think that we need a broader group of people, or we need to take a good look at who is underrepresented even on your board. I think that there's a disparity there.
Thank you, Senator Hayden, and Representative Mack, to that point, I think, had a follow-up question, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And kind of just piggybacking on what Representative Hayden said, I know it was talked about earlier, and as an oversight committee, our goal is to make sure that we're not just doing a different version of what we did before in terms of the, you know, getting people insured, but that we're improving it. And I know you said we don't ask questions in our data set about did you have insurance before, were you long-time uninsured? But it seems to me that that's going to cut us off at the knees in terms of really knowing whether or not we're doing a good job. And so, and also knowing kind of what they paid before, is the coverage you're getting better and cheaper than it was before? Those two key questions, I would say, in 2 years would really be a benchmarker to say, wow, we've done a good job. So I'm wondering, and I think it would get at Representative Hayden's issue of do we know if we're helping the people that really needed it, or are we just doing a different version of what we did before that so many people thought was very broken? So do we have any plans in terms of those questions coming into play or being able to measure that in the near future, or even if not in the near future, at some point we'll start to measure that?
Chair Buettner.
Chair Atkins, Representative Mack. Absolutely, yes. It's the same question that we as a board have been asking, and we've had a couple of meetings where we've talked about what reporting are we getting out, how are we getting at it, and there's both a short-term and a long-term. I think to your point, to the long-term, we, you know, have talked to the organizations that are measuring that already. I don't want to recreate the wheel. I don't want to spend money to create new data that already exists in another form. But in the short term, we are doing things, and Scott mentioned it at the board meeting yesterday, engaging somebody to help us understand the metrics and what we're seeing. And that's a quick snapshot of what we're seeing. There are some long-term measures that are being done by the Department of Health and others, and I want to be a recipient and be the first to know about that so we know who we're helping. But we're also doing some short-term quick snapshots to get a sense of what is happening in the field as we're out there today.
Okay. And a quick follow-up from Senator Lurie as well.
Not a follow-up, just some additional context and some of the things that we have going on in Minnesota for a very long time. Chair Buettner mentioned our health economics wing over at the Department of Health does longitudinal studies about this all the time, and it's part of their standard operating business model. And they will continue to inform us and share their findings with the chair. We've also got SHADAC. I can't remember exactly what it stands for, but over at the University
something
of Minnesota.
Something S, something H, something.
Yeah. I was going to do that, but it was more than three letters. And so, you know, we in Minnesota have a really good position to be beginning from in these analyses, and it truthfully set the stage for us to, I mean, one of the things that I actually haven't said yet here is that we did set a good statute on the books with good underpinnings and policy, and you know, we've got a troubled website that we're moving forward with, but it's time to partner up with some of our partners again, make sure that we look at exactly the metrics that you're talking about, Representative Mack, continue to rely on our collaborative healthcare community and start to try to fix these issues and move forward.
Mr. Chair, very briefly, in response, also points well taken, Representative Mack. And I just wanted to mention one thing. do collect as part of the application process a prior coverage question. And it's one that in the prioritization of issues that we've needed to sort of get information out on, it's on the docket for future being able to get that information out. It's just simply one where as we've sort of gone through, it hasn't risen to the top as we've been just trying to get sheer numbers out to individuals. So that's all information hopefully we'll be able to share with you moving forward.
Folks, I want to call on Senator Jensen. She's had a number of questions. She's been very polite in not asking them. I asked her not to because she's not actually on the commission. My concern is that if she asks questions, that the next time we're going to have 30 other legislators that will join us.
One just came in.
No, you then Senator Jensen, there will be no questions. I don't want any from him. For the record, that's my seatmate, and he just wore his snowmobile boots into the meeting. Is it that deep out there, Rick? But as long as if we can agree that it's not precedent setting and it's a courtesy to Senator Jensen, are we okay with that? Anybody object to doing that?
I like that part about no precedent setting.
Well, and I just don't – you know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah. All right. And – Senator, thank you for your – well, she's fed a couple questions or shared some questions through us, but in light of the fact that we don't have any objection to it, Senator Jensen.
Okay,
thank you for joining us, by the way.
Thank you.
Yes, Senator Sharon. Wait till we turn you up a little bit. We've got the volume control. All right, Senator Sharon.
You aren't able to see me, so that you cannot tell, but I do have some questions as well, and I hope I have a chance to ask.
Absolutely. You're on the list. So we'll be right back to you. We're going to have Senator Jensen ask her question, and then we'll be back, and then we've got some others that we're circling back to.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hoppe.
Senator, pardon me, but from a logistical perspective, I know we've got kids coming in at 5. I know Mr. Nobles is number, whatever he is, on the list. I'd like to hear, and I think other people would like to hear from Mr. Nobles, so...
Thank you, Representative.
I know I'm on the list and part of the problem. I talk too much, but we'll.
And folks, absent some really horrible objection, what I would like to do is hear Senator Jensen's question, Senator Sharon's question or questions, then take the next couple parts of the agenda, come back then so that we, because I think we still have a few more follow-up questions for Mr. Leitz and Chair Buettner. And hear from them once we've heard, because we've got 4 or 5 more people that took the time to join us here today. Yes, Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, we do have a request to have MMB at the table.
I understand that. They weren't on the agenda at all, though, and for those 4 or 5 people that signed up with the committee administrator, I want to make sure that they're given first opportunity before we go to anybody else.
Contracts were on the agenda, and MMB has control over the contracts.
Okay, thank you.
They were on the agenda.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be really fast, so follow along. I'll talk really quickly. Mr. Leitz, the thing that I'm hearing today and have been hearing is kind of this blending of private and public kind of plans that are available. And my question has to do with how do we and how do you as Mincher, having private agents and navigators, do that blending and incorporate that blending of a private, because the way that it's presented and the way that that agents and navigators do it is it's just a plan. It's not separated that way, but we talk about it that way. So, for instance, this is an example. Everything that I saw in PowerPoint said that the commission for agents would be similar as today. Who is responsible for how that actually is carried out? Is it Mincher? Who is it that is responsible for making sure that is happening and how that works?
Gentlemen, who wants to take this one? Mr. Leitz?
I might ask for some
certainly.
Assistance.
A lifeline.
Yeah.
And obviously, sir, if you'll just identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, Eric Larson, Chief Operating Officer, Mincher.
Okay. And are you able to address Senator Jensen's issue?
Mr. Chair, Senator Jensen, I can address your issue. The compensation for brokers is going to be the same path that is taken today. So health plans are responsible for paying commissions to the brokers. We are responsible for helping make sure that as we send the enrollment over to the health plans, that we identify the agent of record as part of that transaction so that they can store that and pay accordingly.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Senator Jensen. Senator Sharon, you had, and I think we've got the volume all the way up. Senator Sharon, do you have questions or comments?
Yes, I do. Can you hear me?
I believe the people are nodding, so yes.
Okay, yes, and you can repeat my question. I've appreciated the conversation, and I find it moving around a lot of different subjects, so it's hard to get something completely resolved. For example, we talked about outreach, which I think is important, that it is directed towards the group that most likely will not access traditional media. I really want to affirm my concerns about that and the failure within the board or within Minshew staff to recognize that they may be looking at how to communicate with people through a lens that does not match the audience that they're trying to reach. So I want to—I would have spoken to that, but someone else did already, so I appreciate that. I'm interested, of course, in the future funding concerns and the transparency with which the board deals with the oversight committee, which many of the questions have addressed. But today, my main concern is the existing system and the need of people to access it and to get their health care coverage completed. And to that end, I don't need to respond to that. I just want to add to the conversation that the problem-solving process about the call line, if there is one place where people's frustration is high, it is at the long wait, sitting on the phone, trying to get through that call line. And I do not understand why it's not possible to triage out those calls and to make certain that that those with the simplest questions are not sitting there for 2 hours waiting for an answer, along with these more complex questions. So when you create a solution to the call line, then it recognizes not all calls are the same, but you're having everybody making that call waiting for long periods of time. And I think that that's a simple fix, and there are many simple fixes that could reduce the general public's frustration and then confusion. That the frustration with the Minnesota Minshew's rollout with the benefits of the Affordable Care Act, that those two things cannot get confused in people's minds. The other thing that I've gotten from counties is a request, and this is to Mr. Light, and that is their frustration with the difficulties that there have been in the public program going through Minshew, that all of the expansion of the medical assistance clients up to 133% of poverty and no eligibility requirements, they're just wondering why they have to deal with going through a system that's delayed when they are capable of processing those applications for eligibility at the local level. And to look at whether or not that can be handed back to the counties they staffed up, anticipating that they would be getting more people involved in those programs. And why not give some relief to the technology at the state level to allow the county to do some things that they can do as part of using your partners properly? So those are just the two pieces of feedback that I have. I share the other concerns about board engagement, board appropriateness, about transparency and informing us of decisions being made and why they're made, the future funding. But until we resolve these short-term frustrations and difficulties, we really are using our energy to fixing something rather than long-term strategies that the board could engage in to do such things as help the rural part of the state that is having differential in their rates as opposed to the metro area, taking a look at what authority has the legislature given this board under the active role that they can play in determining value to help the rural part of the state have better rates for their insurance policies. We won't even get to those conversations if we don't get some of these simple things resolved first. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. And I will now repeat those comments for anyone who was in it. No, thank you, Senator Sharon. Is there anybody who wasn't able to hear those comments? All right. I think we had the volume at the right. Gentlemen, either one of you want to, it was more in the comment line than a question, but is there any response or anything further that you'd like to add on those points?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Lights.
Very, very briefly. Just to acknowledge that Senator Sharon's points are well taken, and we have installed some triage processes within the call center. The challenges there remain, but I think part of the review process that we're going through right now is to identify additional opportunities to do that. So I want to thank Senator Sharon for her comments because I think they're very well taken.
Okay. And Senator Sharon, were you able to hear Mr. Lights' comments?
I was, and I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you. We have what I'd like to, it's now 3:30. I want to, I think just for the sake of the young people that are here and taking the room over, we should probably aim to be out of here by 4:50, probably, if they, I don't know if they have any setup to do. Maybe we'll be done before that, but just for people's planning purposes, what I'd like to do at this point, we had Mr. Haas asked to testify within the context of item 5 on the agenda. He's a former Republican lawmaker, a colleague of ours who I believe is talking on behalf of brokers or agents, Mr. Haas. So, gentlemen, thank you very much. Don't go away because we may get an opportunity to circle back with some more questions. And, Mr. Haas, you're going to be the first one that's going to hear this. There's like four or five people after you. If you can do your best, and you always were very good on the House floor of getting to the point as rapidly as you can. Thank you very much.
Mr. Thank you. Haas. Like they say, stand up, Mr. Chairs. Stand up, shut up, and sit down, right? So you say your point. Good afternoon, committee members. Appreciate the opportunity to testify. I'm Bill Haas, and I own Haas Managed Benefits, and I'm a brokerage agency dealing strictly in employee benefits. It's been a very frustrating experience for myself, and I know my broker colleagues. And before I start, I do want to thank the committee. I testified in October in regards to the breach of data security for myself and my colleagues, and we are now covered under identity theft protection and credit monitoring service. I get an email every month, so I appreciate that. So it gives you a little more confidence. But it's been a very frustrating thing dealing with the website. I've had people in my city calling me wanting assistance because they have not been able to get assistance or get through on the computer. And it's been frustrating because you go in and you start putting in data, and I've learned from the first one on that as you ask questions, you write them down on a piece of paper, because invariably you'll get two or three pages into the website and you hit the next button and you go back out to the first page and all the data you inputted is gone. So it takes time to do that. The other issue with the website is the fact that once you register, then you go in and start looking for plans, and you've got to actually re-register again. There's no way that they're repopulating that website or auto-populating the information they already have. So, you know, you're asking questions over and over again for these individuals. When it comes down to plan selection, you know, I always ask what range they're looking for as far as cost and that. And when we go into those plans, we're looking at plans and we want to check the doctor's networks, but when we hit the doctor's link, we can't open up the link for the networks. So we can't check. So that has to be done at a different time. I know at times I have tried to get been on the phone with a constituent who wants to get in and get signed up, and what happens is I can't get in the website. It's crashed. It's down. And so I basically take their phone number and say, when I can get into the system, I will call you. And I have made those calls on weekends even to say, I finally got in, let's go, you know, to assist them. So, you know, we need to improve that type of thing. The other thing is I am, as the owner of my agency, I am to be registered as an administrator. I receive numerous emails, and I know we have a specific email address for brokers. It's a broker line that we can email in and get our questions answered. To date, I have not gotten one response return on any of the emails I have sent to that link. That's been disappointing. When I get my password and the URL to link to sign up as an administrator, I've faithfully gone online and gone to the URL, and I either get that the URL is not valid or the password that they just emailed me is not valid. And so I'll send an email saying, hey, this is what happened. Please help me out. Never respond. 2 or 3 weeks later, I get an email. You haven't signed up in as administrator. Here is your new password. Here is a URL. Same thing happens. And that has happened a number of times, and it's now been about 3 weeks, and I haven't heard anything back on any additional information. So we need to get somebody dedicated that's going to answer those emails that brokers are sending in, because it's not only my frustration. You know, it's coming from my colleagues. And we need to look at getting, you know, that situation corrected, because brokers want to help. You know, we're here to help, and you know, we're here with a system that is in place and how do we make it work, and how do we help our constituents? The other thing is, you know, we keep hearing and we've heard discussion today about low cost. We're the lowest in the nation. Well, my premium for my personal insurance has gone up in excess of 25%. My out-of-pocket expense went from $3,000 maximum to $6,300. So, you know, for the majority of the individuals in Minnesota, and I know for the groups that I work with, everyone's taking a rate increase. Unless you get a subsidy, you will get a premium decrease. And that's the other thing that I've run into, too. I've had some people that I've helped that have qualified for MinnesotaCare only to call back after they got the paperwork, and I heard some of the testimony today, that they're not eligible for MinnesotaCare, and now they want to know what to do. And so in our MA, the same thing. The system says you qualify for MA, and then all of a sudden they're calling and say they're not eligible for MA. So that is another issue, because people, when they go into the website, you know, it's a mindset we get into. When you see that I'm getting a $75 premium credit for my plan, I'm locking into my mind that I'm paying $75 less, and all of a sudden when I come out and now I'm not eligible for that, you know, it upsets people, and I think people are frustrated enough about it. So I think those are areas we need. I would suggest, and I mentioned this to Mr. Leitz when I saw him earlier today, that the committee look, or Minsher look, at setting up a broker advisory group to deal with the brokerage issues and to get this broker portal set up, because we can assist people. And a lot of people call and they want to know cost and things like that beforehand, you know. And it's just like now, I can go on any one of the carrier websites and I can get a quote for insurance, but I can't go on Minsher's site and find out, look at any of the plan coverages, look at cost or anything beforehand. I have to register, and that registration process is where the frustration starts. So maybe we need to look at part of that website as information and saying, okay, here are the plans. So when I go into the website, or a person is going on their own to go into the website, they already know what the plans are. So they don't have to make a decision all of a sudden when they're in there working and signing up to say, oh, what do I have to do now? What plan's best? And so I think we need to look at something like that, is give everybody an advanced look and get the broker portal set up so that we as brokers have our own website that we can go on and we can look at coverages and rates and get all the information that we need to advise the people that we're working with, you know, because we're here to help people and we want to get them insured and we don't want anybody left uninsured. And so that... those are my suggestions, and I, you know, I'm willing to work with Mr. Leitz and my professional association to see what we can do to put together a broker advisory group if they're willing to work with us on that, and maybe we can move ahead and get some of these issues resolved a lot quicker.
And Mr. Haas, thanks again for joining us. I think, by the way, as you were coming up, I may have overrepresented. I think you're speaking for yourself and your own agency or brokerage,
right,
correct?
Right.
Not for all the associations or
right,
whatever.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I just wanted to make sure.
I am
clear.
A member of, I've been a longstanding member of my professional
right.
association, but no, I'm speaking for myself, but I've talked to a number of frustrated colleagues.
Yeah,
too.
I just didn't want you walking out of here and having somebody say, you know, gol darn it, yeah, Bill, you know.
What did you say?
Yeah, exactly. So okay. My apologies. But no. Representative Loeffler, I think you
yes.
had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Haas, I think those are excellent suggestions in terms of how to practically involve the brokers on it. And you're not the first person I've heard the idea of saying you'd like to be able to shop first before you have to create an enrollment screen. I would say that we need to expand on that idea to say that first you have to go through a preliminary screen to determine if you're eligible for MA, MinnesotaCare, or premium subsidy. Because if you're eligible for MinnesotaCare or MA, you're not going to have the choice of, you know, 50-plus plans. You're going to have a much narrower thing. And so people will be equally frustrated if we ask them to look at all these plans and look at all their provider networks, and then they find out, no, that they don't have as big a range. And so I think your idea of saying, let's try and get some basic information before people have to go through all the work of enrollment and establishing that account, I think would help a lot. And it would actually motivate people to want to put up with whatever they're going to have to do, put up with, to get the account established, because they'll I have been hearing from people who are absolutely thrilled with the rates they're getting. In fact, I was at a meeting this morning in which there was 25 people, and I heard of two success stories, one in a person who was uninsured until she got onto the system, and another from a small business that's saving over $200 and getting better coverage for them and the employees. There's only just a few employees. And so there are people who are doing that, but I think more people would put up with the frustrations if they could see the benefit before they got to getting lost in the technology. So I like that suggestion, and thank you for bringing it forward.
And Mr. Huz, I had just one question for you as well, and that was on the security breach that they had a couple months back.
Yes.
You said that you've now, after we had our last oversight, you started to get those credit report, the monthly reviews or whatever. Are you aware of, and again, I'm not trying to have you speak for all of your colleagues, but are you aware of your colleagues are getting those same things as well, or other agents or brokers that you associate with whose data was breached?
I'm not aware of that, Mr. Chair, but I know I have, you know, Minsure sent out a letter, formal letter with a link to the website that would do the credit monitoring for us, and we all had I had a password and everything. So I would assume my colleagues, you know, it was important to all of us as we were talking about it in different meetings we were at this fall, that I would assume that they would have done the same thing I did.
And I think we heard that assurance from them shortly afterwards. But, gentlemen, if the guys from Minsure, if you can at least confirm for us that it wasn't just Mr. Haas that got on the not that you're not important to us, but we want to make sure that all 1,500 who were impacted by it. Mr. Turpin, if you don't mind, just maybe you can confirm that. That was a lingering issue from the last meeting. Mm-hmm.
Certainly, Mike Turpin, General Counsel for Minsure. You're correct. All of the brokers were contacted and made that, and that offer was made. To date, approximately 12% of the individuals who received such an offer have taken up that offer.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Turpin, and thank you, Mr. Haas. Speaking of issues that have come up since the last, the next item on the agenda is the IT security issue was identified by Mr. Lanterman. If you can join us, just in fairness to Mr. Lanterman, I think some of us have been shared his contribution history of Michelle Bachmann or his folks like that, and I just wanted to assure him we could care less about your politics. What we care about is your competency. You identified an issue on the news of the ability to access. And I can't even explain it, Mr. Lanterman. So maybe for the sake of the commission, what we'd like you to do is identify the issue that you found and then address if it's Minsure solely that has it or other entities that have it and then what's been done or if it has been addressed.
Certainly. And good afternoon and thank you. I am the Chief Technology Officer of Computer Forensic Services located in Minnetonka. And prior to joining that company, I was a member of the United States Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force. I was in law enforcement for 11 years. I'm currently appointed as the Computer Forensic Analyst for the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office as well. Typically, when a consumer goes to a website to conduct business, he or she may be presented with either a lock or a key that should tell us. We've been taught your data is secure, your data is encrypted, it's okay to proceed. On November 5th, I demonstrated this device to a member of a local news team. And what this device does is it prevents encryption from ever occurring. So all data being entered into that website is being sent unencrypted and would allow a hacker to see all of that information in the clear. That's username, password, social security numbers, dates of birth, anything that a consumer is entering into a web page. And let me be clear, this is not just a Minsure issue. Approximately 80% of all web pages that I tested had this flaw as well. I did that demonstration on November 5th of last year. On November 6th, Minsure was notified of that vulnerability. On November 16th, a representative from Minnesota IT responded to the media via a personal Hotmail account that there was no problem to fix and that users were to blame. On December 12th, NPR conducted an interview with the state's chief information security officer saying, "We've done our own testing. I believe we've fixed the problem." The problem was not fixed. NPR contacted me, asked me to confirm whether or not that fix occurred. It had not. I agreed to meet with the state's chief information security officer on December 16th. I explained the flaw to the chief information security officer, and I told him how to fix it. And within 24 hours, the MNsure website was fixed. Now, with all due respect, when I was a police officer, if I waited 6 weeks to answer a 911 call, I would likely no longer be employed. I would just urge Minnesota IT to take security reports seriously and follow up in a more timely manner. I think that allowing 6 weeks to go by and allowing citizens' private information to remain vulnerable is just much too long. Thank you.
Mr. Lanterman, did you you said other sites were also you? Did you test other sites to find out if they had a similar vulnerability?
Other health exchange,
whether it's or I think you and I visited a few days ago. You
yes,
talked,
sir.
I believe, bank sites, and you, I don't know that you necessarily have to explain or identify
certainly.
Each and every one of them.
Certainly. Well, I tested 12 health exchange sites for other states. Kentucky was the best. There were approximately 7 that failed. There were 5 that passed our test. So 5 other states were not vulnerable. But some of the largest companies, some of the largest commercial companies that I could name are vulnerable to this.
And I don't know that we, by the way, I stopped because I don't know that we want you to identify who they are.
No.
There's... you be careful over there, Huntley. But there were, as we visited the other day privately, there were several banks that have not fixed this or had not fixed it at the time. And there were a number of large retail, like really large retail sites. Can you confirm whether or not those have been addressed at this point or not?
Well, I can tell you that I have assisted 7 organizations. I volunteered my time to assist them. And they were fixed as of November 12th, it took me 3 days to help them fix their sites.
And by the way, the device, I assume, is not on, right? I've
oh,
turned
no,
my
sir.
Phone off.
No. No, sir. But, I guess my point is, as you can, and it's this top device, the bottom device is simply a battery. It's the size of a deck of cards. And I know when the local media ran the story, they focused on Wi-Fi. This isn't just a Wi-Fi issue. It can be used over a wired network as well.
And thank you. Are there other questions for Mr. Lanterman? We appreciate you taking the time. The one thing we wanted to confirm is at your most recent testing of the site, you found that it, in fact, was secure. It was no longer vulnerable to that device, correct?
That is correct. Within 24 hours of my meeting with Mr. Boozy, the website had been fixed.
And thank you. And by the way, in fairness to the folks at MNIT, or Minute as we affectionately call it around here, I think that there was how would you describe it, a difference of opinion in terms of exactly how the fix came to be came to take place. But the main purpose was I've encountered any number of folks that saw Mr. Lanterman or read the article and are of the belief that if they go on MNsure, their username, their password, and all that information are insecure or unsecure and vulnerable to that device. So it was nice of you to take a few minutes to join us and confirm for us that, in fact, it's no longer vulnerable to – I've heard it called a pineapple, by the way. Is that the right
Well,
term?
I actually went out of my way to never identify the device by name.
Okay.
And
so
for
what
whatever
done,
reason
– Everyone completely disregarded what I've
for, But again, for whatever reason, Minnesota IT posted the name of the device on their webpage. So I don't know why that would have
and
been.
Actually,
that seemed counterintuitive.
When I Googled it, I'm not the first to have said that term. So it's out there beyond even what I came up with. But are there any other questions? If not, Mr. Lanterman, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you, sir.
To join us today.
And if I could just clarify one other thing, I'm not a Republican, so I'm not sure where you received your information.
I don't know if that's true or not. I was contacted with that information, and I was afraid that other members have. I don't think anybody on the commission cares about what your politics are.
Okay, sir. I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it. Thank you. And finally, but next on the agenda, we've got legislative auditor, Mr. Nobles, and his folks. Mr. Nobles, welcome back.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Jim Nobles, legislative auditor, and with me at the table is Cecile Ferkel, deputy legislative auditor. And I just want to add my thanks to Mr. Latterman for his assistance to the state. Shortly after he revealed this vulnerability, he very graciously allowed two members of my staff to attend a demonstration of that vulnerability. And so we have communicated with him very directly about this, and I must say I, too, was very concerned that the state of Minnesota was not taking this vulnerability seriously. And Ms. Ferkel and I met with the head of Minute and Mr. Boozy and strongly encouraged them to meet with Mr. Latterman. And shortly, I think, in fact, it was the day after they did and finally resolved the issue. So, again, my thanks to Mr. Latterman. Mr. Chairman, there are many questions around Minsure. Some of them are about how we move forward, and those are the most important questions. Those are the most important concerns, and that's what I know you and the leadership at Minsure needs to put your time and energy into. But there are a secondary set of questions about what happened. Why did we get to this place? And those are the questions the Office of the Legislative Auditor is going to address. For example, you've asked a question here today. Who was involved in the decision to change the Maximus contract? We will find an answer to that, and we will also find an answer to who was in charge after Maximus was taken out of that role. We will do a very careful, very thorough, more or less a forensics analysis of what happened, why. And that's in the name of something that I think we all believe in, and that's accountability. We have spent an enormous amount of money to build a system and to encourage people to come use it. And I think there needs to be a full airing, a thorough, independent examination of what went wrong as well as what went right. And that's what we're going to do. We started this week by starting to conduct an audit that we are, frankly, required to conduct. Because we are here today discussing this because, as has been referenced, the federal government gave the state of Minnesota a great deal of money. And when the federal government gives a state a lot of money, they expect it to be audited by an independent auditor. And we are that independent auditor. And so we started this audit today, this week, not necessarily in response to all of the controversy, but because there has to be accountability to the federal government and to the citizens of this state, who I remind us all also pay those federal taxes, for how that money was used. So we're going to conduct that audit. We are in there now. We're actually going to expand the scope of that audit so we can even go beyond what the federal government requires. We're going to cover 18 months, not just the fiscal year 2013. And we're going to ask a lot of questions about how the money was spent. Was it spent according to the requirements of federal law, the grant agreement, and a lot of other aspects of what was required? And Ms. Ferkel is the deputy for the Financial Audit Division. She is going to be in charge of that audit. We're putting together that team, and she's going to talk just a little bit more about what that audit is all about, because I know it's been in the news, and people are wondering what is the scope of it, what is the time frame, and we want to provide those answers to you and others who are interested. I want to just mention two other reviews that I intend to certainly conduct the first one because I have the jurisdiction to make that decision. We will conduct an IT security audit at Minsure this year. That will be a team that we have, three people in my office who conduct very specialized IT security audits. They are currently employed looking at other places in Minnesota, but as soon as they are free, we will send them down to Minsure. The other review that I would like to conduct, but it will take action by the Legislative Audit Commission, And that is, I think there needs to be a thorough evaluation of Minsure from beginning to end. How did we get to where we are? And those questions would be broad-ranging about the management, about the governance, about the performance. And it would also attempt to look at some of the questions that have been raised here about, have we achieved the policy objective in terms of signing people up in the target demographic that we need to make this work? We will work hard to find answers for you to some of those questions. So this year is going to be the year of Minsure for us in terms of oversight and accountability. We'll be doing a lot of other things as well. But it is a top priority, and we for sure are going to be conducting the two audits that I referenced, and I hope to have your support in having the Legislative Audit Commission, Senator Benson is a member of that, authorizing a thorough and comprehensive evaluation. And again, I realize that this is all looking back in the interest of accountability. And I repeat, I understand that the energy right now for you, for Minsure, needs to be fixing the problem and moving forward. But while you do that, we will be digging deep into what happened. So, if Mr. Chairman, if I could, I'd just like Ms. Fergal just to highlight for you what the objectives of the audit we are currently conducting are. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If I might, Mr. Nobles, and thank you very much, but my understanding from the legislation was that we were having you do an audit. So I just want to, is there something different from what was set forth in the legislation that you're describing for us here?
Mr. Chairman, during the discussion of the legislation, Minsure indicated that they, under the federal law, were required to have an independent audit conducted every year. And I told legislators, you included, that that was a responsibility we already had under the federal law, and so we would be fulfilling that. It's called the Single Audit Act, and that's what this audit is primarily about. But again, I want to go beyond what the federal government requires to fulfill some of your expectations, that there would be an audit, if possible, every year of Minsure to address not only federal legal requirements, but what you put into the law in terms of the expectations and requirements for Minsure. So, yes, this is that audit, Mr. Chairman.
And thank you, Mr. Knowles. I'm just trying to clarify, and I'm fully supportive. I thought that's what we said during the course of the legislation and all of the committee hearings, is that we absolutely were going to have an audit. We wanted an audit. Federal government required an audit. You came and testified and said you're going to do an audit. Is there something beyond, and my sense was that was going to be a very thorough, in fact, that was my recollection, your testimony was going through some of the things, but it mirrored very much what you've said today, is why I'm just trying to clarify what, on top of what you testified to back in February or March, what's different or in addition to that that you're contemplating, assuming that the Audit Commission is on board?
Mr. Chairman, nothing is different. I think I testified to the fact that we would be conducting an audit that would satisfy the federal government, but that we felt a responsibility and have the authority and responsibility to do other work as well, and that we have a team that conducts IT security audits, and given the concerns about privacy and data security that I said to committees during that consideration, that I would make it a high priority to do that. I also indicated that at some point, given the importance, visibility of Minsure as a new state organization, that we should at some point have a thorough evaluation. So whether it comes this year, next year, at some point, I think there should be such an evaluation as we do for many programs and activities in state government.
And thank you very much. I appreciate it. I think on behalf of all of us, I've never heard a legislator who didn't have a ton of respect for your thoroughness and appreciation for what you do. And I just wanted to see if there was something that was different than what I was hearing back in whenever that was that we were in front of the one committee together. Before Ms. Fergal, we got a couple quick questions, I think, from Representative Hoppe and Representative
Loeffler.
Where are you again? Loeffler. I was looking at Tara. I'm sorry. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll add to what you said. And first of all, thank you. And we all do have a lot of respect for you and your office and what you do. And I would hope, in light of what we've heard and haven't heard today, earlier today, that we, as an oversight committee, would encourage the Legislative Audit committee, commission, to let Mr. Nobles go and do the audit as soon as he possibly can and give him every possible resource and leave no stone unturned. I mean, we have a board and other things that nobody really knows what went on, and I know we need to look at what's going forward, and it's for him to look at what went past, but I think we need to find out who was running the store.
Yeah. And Representative Loftus.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Nobles. We all appreciate the thoroughness of your staff and the credibility of the work it's done. I do have a bit of concern, though, about the timing and also roles and the key questions that are going to be addressed, in that typically a program audit, who decided when, are the public policy objectives being met, all that, doesn't happen within, the first few months of something getting off the ground. And as we've heard earlier in this discussion, and we could have spent probably many hours on it, there are a lot of problems with the current as is. And I just do not want the need to understand who knew what, when, how, and made what choice to distract staff from fulfilling that mission, which is to get as many Minnesotans as we possibly can signed up into insurance coverage before March 31st, to get the system stabilized and working. And then I think we all are going to want to learn lots of good lessons about how do we structure new entities, what should we as policymakers be weighing, what should we have built in terms of reporting expectations. Those are important work, and I welcome your partnership in that. I just really don't want it to distract anyone from solving the problem of the person who's on hold for a long time, or the people whose cases are stucked, I think was the word, in the black hole. And and so I'm just thinking in terms of the timing, we should also weigh that. And also because our oversight commission, we are the group charged both by the House and the Senate and signed off by the governor to be the oversight of this. I think there's going to be some shared responsibilities with us with the audit commission, and maybe we're going to want to explore sort of commonly putting together sort of what are those key questions that we think would be most useful. Because I think typically when you do a program audit, at least I'm not as familiar with the financial audit, we actually do as through the legislative process bring kind of key things through and kind of agree on that work plan with you and your staff. And so I would hope that we'd, do this in as thoughtful a way as we had hoped that this rollout would be, and so that at the end we feel like we've problem-solved the immediate issues without too much distraction, and that the agenda for your work is one that helps all of us in our responsibilities. I just wanted to put that on the record, and I suspect that that's your intention. But when I hear, time frames not being mentioned or we're beginning this week, I just want to make sure that I understand how that's working.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Nobles.
Representative Loeffler. The evaluation, which I mentioned last, would certainly go forward in consultation with this committee and with other legislators that are interested. That's the way we do that work. It's very interactive, and we would certainly solicit your concerns and questions. And it wouldn't begin, frankly, until probably May or June. So it won't interrupt the time frame that we're talking about now. But as to the audit, it does have to begin now because the federal government requires it. In fact, we are under a very tight timeline with the federal government to do what is we call single audit work. The federal government gave the state of Minnesota a lot of money in the fiscal year 13 period that we do have to cover for the federal government. It was $70 million. The federal government requires an independent audit of that money sooner rather than later, and they set some pretty tight time deadlines. And I might add, too, that everybody at MNsure knew this was going to happen. When they accepted the federal money, they knew this audit was going to have to take place. In fact, the federal government gave them money in their budget to pay for it. So this is not something that is just sprung on them this week. This is something they've known about for months. And I guess the final thing I would say, sure, we will be very sensitive and understanding to the situation they're in. And we will send a team down there that will be on site. We will need to get information. But we go online, and frankly, we download a lot of data from the state's financial systems on our own. We don't necessarily need them to help us. But we may have some questions. We may need to also do some interviewing of people who were responsible for the contracts that were being paid for with the federal grant to see, again, who was in charge of what. I mean, one of the federal requirements is that we determine whether or not MNsure had in place adequate internal controls to ensure that the public money was spent appropriately and lawfully. And so we will need to not only know from looking at documents, but talking to people. I think you've seen here today a demonstration of there seems to be quite a bit of confusion about who was in charge of certain things. That will be very important for us to nail down. That can't be a remaining question. We have to determine that there were, in fact, officials at MNsure who were taking responsibility and oversight for the expenditure of this money, or internal controls were not adequate. So this audit has to proceed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Knowles. I just wanted to make sure that I understood kind of what the demands might be at this critical point when we're all still trying to get everything working. And I think you've satisfied, you know, my questions about how that would work with this is really focused primarily on the financial authority and the numbers, and it's not going to distract the maybe the IT people and the planning people as much as maybe the people who are keeping the books and the payroll and who authorized hiring someone at what point. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Senator Benson, then Representative Hoppe, and we still got a couple folks that I want to that signed up for the agenda I want to make sure we get to. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to thank the legislative auditor for stepping up to help clarify some things for the public and for this oversight committee, because we are going to need some help. The legislative auditor is also supposed to give us information on duplication of services that MNsure is engaging in, which might actually help focus MNsure as an organization. So if there are things that DHS can take care of without MNsure interference, that they be allowed to do so. MNsure seems to have gotten tentacles into many places, and I don't understand exactly why they're in some of the places that they're at. And so having a report to the legislature statutorily March 1st of 2014 would be very helpful. The single audit obviously will create a great deal of transparency since I believe all of the MNsure money has been federal money. And so looking back into federal dollars, seeing how they were spent, ensuring that in this lack of leadership environment, funds weren't simply given out for pet projects is going to be extremely helpful in focusing this organization on its primary purposes instead of being distracted by the wants and needs of people who saw a large pot of money and a flexible organization and decided to take advantage. I think this is very important for the integrity of MNsure going forward.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to associate myself and highly approve of Representative Loeffler's comments. I think we do need to take a look back, and I think that's what Mr. Knowles is going to do. He had a very nice answer to that after you asked your question. I said it earlier, and I think it is important, as you said, I mean, you didn't say this. This is my words. This is what we're stuck with. And we got to make this thing work. And I'm encouraged with Mr. Light's reaching out to the plans and the people. You're right. This is what the people of Minnesota need. Those that are going to be on the exchange need this. Having said that, I'm glad that Mr. Knowles is looking into this. And I'm glad he's going to be asking who knew what and who knew what when. And where does the buck stop? I mean, we have a board that apparently doesn't know anything about anything. And we need to find out some of these issues so that we're not going forward on a terribly flawed foundation of MNsure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members. Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I think that Mr. Knowles, as has been mentioned many times, we all do have a great deal of respect for you. And it's, you know, I mean, I think you really highlighted the reason we have a legislative auditor. I mean, we're you know, we need to understand how major public rollouts such as this actually work. And the venue that we've got going on here, the venue that we'll start up in late February in the legislature, is really ill-equipped for this type of investigation. I mean, we could bring people up here and do the who knew what when thing forever. We're not an adjudicative body. We're not a forensics team. And it really devolves quickly with little result other than a bunch of talk. So your work is incredibly valuable, and this is a really important function that we as a legislature and as an administration got initiated. And we're administering a public function both for Medicaid enrollments, also for Minnesota Care enrollments, and then for the APTC set, those accessing federal tax credits. I mean, that's a very public function that we all take very seriously, and the oversight of how that rolled out is something that we all really do want. And I think that your initial take that really we all need to be focused on making sure that going forward we can do our best. But the view that you give us of the history is really a critical view. And so I thank you for your work. And I know that we all anticipate looking at and giving serious consideration to the findings and helping us use that as the context for what, if any, appropriate changes might be needed by the legislature.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator.
Auditor Nobles?
I'd like to just pick up on that point. If we have just a minute, I want Ms. Ferkel, and I think you have in front of you what the objectives of our audit are, and she can answer questions about that. But I do think it's very important to pick up on this point. The last time I was before this committee, we were discussing the data breach, an issue of great concern to you and citizens. And you were able to learn some things from the testimony that you were given. And, Senator Lori, I think this is the point you're making, is that in this kind of setting, you can hear things. You can hear bits and pieces. But what we learned is that there was much more to the story, and you didn't hear. In fact, you were told by Minshew that this was just an HR problem that had been taken care of, and that the internal investigation done by Minshew found that there were no systemic problems that created that data breach. We did an examination of what occurred and issued this report, and it found 8 different factors, 8 findings about how Minshew and officials at Minshew contributed to that data breach, not the employee who made the mistake. And so I think along those lines, Senator Lori, that is why we are here. It is very important for this group to hear public testimony and have public hearings. We don't do that. We go away and we dig deep into details, and we have certain investigative authority. And we did put people under oath to learn what we learned about what happened. And so that's what we can do for you on a lot of these issues, and put all the pieces together so you're not just hearing part of the story, and present a full story to you in one of our reports. So, Mr. Chairman, just 5 seconds, if we can just say what we're going to do in the audit.
You bet. Ms. Ferkel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Cecile Ferkel. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor responsible for the Financial Audit Division within the office. We are going to be conducting what we call an internal control and compliance audit. It's the expectation of the federal government that every year our office audits the major federal programs of the state of Minnesota. And for us, that definition is a $30 million threshold based on the $10 billion of federal money that the state of Minnesota gets. For fiscal year 13, Minshew's federal receipts will exceed that $30 million amount, and so they are subject to the single audit requirements. But rather than go in and do a very segmented start and end period and limited amount of expenditures that we look at, we decided that because of the issues that are on the table related to Minshew, we were going to start with the first authorization and the first dollar spent, which goes back into fiscal year 12, go all the way through fiscal year 13's expenditures, and also look at fiscal year 14's expenditures through December 31. And also, again, rather than limit our focus on the things that have been identified for us by the federal government as being their concerns about compliance issues, we also want to extend the look of this financial audit into concerns with compliance with state statute and compliance with state policies. One of the things that we know that we're going to have to deal with, and I think it speaks to how much of a demand this will be on Minshew's staff, is that this audit likely will involve six different entities. It started at Commerce with a federal grant. It moved to MMB. It moved to Minshew. It's very interrelated with things that DHS does, and I think, as you heard today, many of the personnel resources have either moved from DHS into Minshew or still being provided by DHS staff. I expect that some of this will also look at the involvement of the Department of Administration as contracts are created and executed. And I anticipate that the state's IT office, Minute Services, also will have been involved in the deployment and the oversight and the authorization of expenditures for the development of the system. Also, we are going to be working with the contractors, too. We want to make sure that we have a full view of what's happened. We intend to contact the contractors and talk with them also about how the process worked. So rather than put some limited parameters around it and say we're just going to do what's required by the federal government, we're going to give this a good, solid, thorough, comprehensive look of things that fall within the scope of an internal control and compliance audit related to the financial activity that has occurred.
Thank you, Ms. Ferkel. Thank you, Mr. Nobles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
And members, we have the next section on our agenda is public testimony. And then I want to leave a few minutes to check calendars, which hopefully everybody's had an opportunity to get a hold of theirs so we can talk about
and Mr. Chair,
future meetings.
To have MMB come up.
If, yeah, we're doing our best, Senator
Are
Benson.
Are they here?
Next, Senator Benson, let's just get through what we got, if you don't mind. Senator, we've got under public testimony, we've got Teresa Bundick. Is she available? Welcome. Please join us up at the... I'm sorry this seems like a Thanksgiving dinner with this long table and so forth, but we've got you as you purchased through Minshew, and you have want to walk us through what your experience was?
Yeah, I had a great experience.
And if you'd do me one favor, though, and just identify who you are. I know who we are, but for the record, tell these folks who you are.
My name's Teresa Bundick, and I'm a freelance artist, which meant I had a bad insurance policy. Who told me they were going to raise my premium a massive amount. And so I decided to go on Minshew and try to get a policy that way. And so I contacted some navigators, two wonderful young people who helped me. I went to their office and we worked for about 2.5 to 3 hours. And they walked me through the process. I took in all my financial information, and they walked me through the process, and it was quite easy. And I got a wonderful policy that was much better than what I had before. And I'm very happy, very pleased with my policy.
Is it okay for me to, and you don't have to answer this question, but you said you had a bad policy, and now you got
well,
a
bad
can
in
you give
that,
any specifics? Did you save money, or did you get better coverage, or what?
Well, what I mean by bad is I had a huge deductible, $6,300, I think, and not very many bells and whistles. It was not very good. And so I had a fairly high premium. And then, like I said, this policy, this insurance company said, well, we're going to raise your premium starting January 1st about $100, over $100. And so, I decided to go ahead and try my luck. And I got a great policy. It's the top of the line, actually. It's got all the bells and whistles. It's just marvelous. And I hate to buck the tide, but I had a great experience. And it was very, very positive. And I couldn't be happier with my policy, so...
And with respect to those folks who've had some technical problems getting through, and we appreciate and
I know,
appreciate
and I,
their
I
frustration.
I really feel for them, yeah.
Did you have any technical issues as you went through?
No. I had these wonderful navigators, two young people who were, I think, social work majors, and one went to Carleton, and I can't remember the other, University of Minnesota. And they were doing this to get a credit, I think. And so I brought in all my financial information, and I sat there with them, and they sat there with me, and they were very patient, and we had no problems at all. I started the preliminary process on my own computer, answering some of those initial questions, so I got the ball rolling myself. But they were great, and we stumbled around a little bit, you know, a little bit on the, especially the financial questions, asking me my salary and all of that sort of thing for the year 2012. But other than that, it went very smoothly. And then all of those policies came up on the screen, and that was a lot to look at, of course, because there were so many of them. But they were so helpful, my two navigators. They said, well, what do you think of this? And you'll get all this with this one, and you'll do this. And so I was just as happy as could be. So let's see, what happened? I got a notice. I got a premium notice, and I paid it. And then nothing happened for a while, and I got a little suspicious. You know, everyone's talking about this constantly. So I called the insurance company, and I said, am I enrolled? And they said, you are enrolled. So that's the last time I called them. I didn't want to bug them. And then around, they kind of kept me sort of on the cliff, you know, wondering. And then around December 30th, I got the welcome to this wonderful insurance policy, and I got the card, and that's it. I paid the premium, and now I feel great. I mean, it was a great experience. So,
and Ms. Bundig, I think there's a couple questions for you from members. Senator Benson, do you have a question?
Thank yes. you, Mr. Chair. And could you remind me of the testifier's last name?
Bundig.
Bundig. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Bundig. Did the navigators advise you on policies and help you make that choice?
Not necessarily. I would say, gee, this gold D+ looks wonderful. Well, we did go to the bronze and the silver and the gold, and we kind of discussed the ins and outs of what bronze means, what silver means, what gold means. But when we got to the one that looked really good, I liked the deductible was so low, and the office visits were very, the copay was very small. And so I really liked I saw one and I liked it a lot. And I did ask them their opinion. I said, what do you guys think of this? Oh, and they said, that looks great. So then I said, well, let's do it. But we did look at a lot of policies, and there were jillions of them. I mean, as you guys all know, because you've been talking about it for the last 2 hours, but there were many, many, many policies. There were the bronzes and the golds and the silvers and the this and the that. And then the golds had a D+ and a D this and a C this and a that. And it was just highly complex. But that was okay by me. I mean, they were presenting what they could do for you, and you needed to know that. One of you did say something about how it would be great to know what those policies were before you went in and did actually go on the exchange, and I agree with you on that because it was a lot to look at. But I had a great experience. All I had to do was have my financial ducks in a row, and I had that all lined up, my 2012 tax, everything, tax return, all of that, and that's really all I needed. And as far as I can hear from what people, my fellow citizens, are talking about, is that it's that financial part that seems to be such a roadblock. It's getting that all organized and getting that into the computer and hoping that everything is correct. My navigators and I really sat there and went over that financial stuff line by line so that we could get it correct, because you don't want them to come back later and say, well, you didn't tell the truth on this or something, this wasn't correct.
And Ms. Bundick, I think Representative Hoppe had a question for
okay.
you, or maybe that was the same question.
No, I had essentially the same question that Representative Benson had.
Okay. And Ms. Bundick, thank you so much for hanging out with us this afternoon. I know it
yeah.
took us a little while to get to you, but we really appreciate you coming.
It was very interesting. It was very interesting. And I appreciate Minsher. I think in about a year, when all the bugs are worked out, people are going to be very happy with it.
I love it. An optimist.
Yeah. Thank you, Ms.
Bundick. I know. Bundick. Just an optimist.
You have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
I also have Alicia Reed. While she's joining us, there was written comments from Donna Devine. She's a breast cancer survivor who also had an excellent, based on the, I think that's in your packets, and she was able to get coverage and apparently hadn't been able to get coverage before. Ms. Reed, welcome.
Thank you. It's Riedel.
Oh,
so you know.
Well,
okay.
I got Tim Wilkins' text message in my eyes between the two of us. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. I made some notes, so I'm going to pull those up quick here so that we can get through this quickly. I testified in front of you in September at the data breach for the data breach that happened for the agents and brokers. My name is Alicia Riedel. I'm the president of the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters. That's an association that represents agents and brokers. I also am on the steering committee of the Agents Coalition for Healthcare Reform. We are an organization that represents professional health interns, agents, and the associations. Our membership represents more than 54,000 licensed health insurance agents and their employees. We also provide health insurance and other employee benefit advice to more than 80% of the Minnesota employers. So I would like to start off by saying that we appreciate the acknowledgement today and over the last couple of weeks from Minsher about how important brokers are and how valuable they are, and for acknowledging the time and the resources and patience and attempted collaboration that we have shown to Minsher over the past few years. This isn't in my notes, but just to give some examples, we've been on many different committees and given advice, had meetings, met in the mornings and the evenings, sent letters, tried to respond. So it's good to know that there's some open ears to that. As I testified to at the September Legislative Oversight Committee meeting, we have often felt ignored, pacified, and simply overlooked, candidly, as the actual development and implementation of Minsher has happened. Brokers are by nature advisors, consultants, fixers, helpful and compassionate to their clients and individuals. Our number one frustration has been our inability to help those people, to help the Minnesota businesses, to help the individuals that are looking for coverage. I can tell you that we've had many conversations with other assisters as well, including navigators, who share our frustrations, I think, with their ability to help folks. I hear stories almost on a daily basis from our members and other brokers that have simply had to stop offering assistance to those that are looking for help getting coverage through the Minsher marketplace. Not because they don't want to help, not because they are quitters. Like I said, the broker nature is to help. They have had to turn people away because they don't have the tools. They don't have the resources or the answers that they need to help these individuals, and they're uncomfortable providing assistance if they don't feel like they have the knowledge or the resources or the training to help those people. There's no broker portal to help individuals. There's very little help in the form of customer service, and the training, frankly, was lacking. Those brokers that are still trying to help, who are spending hours and days and weeks helping, one person in person, often are not going to be compensated for helping that individual. Part of that is because often they are identified to be eligible for a public program. And as you all know, brokers cannot get compensated for helping those people get enrolled. And by the time they've helped that person and they know that they are going to be into a public program, they're not going to give up and walk away from them. And the handoff process to a navigator is broken. There's not an ability for an individual to identify both a broker and a navigator who've helped them through this process. It's also impossible for a broker to check out the status of a person's application, or next to impossible, or their enrollment, because there's been little to no actual reporting of brokers who should be assigned to an individual's account, meaning that they cannot call MNsure for information, look up status online, or call the carrier and get information or act on the behalf of their client. This issue is simply unacceptable. Every Minnesotan should have the right to appoint a licensed professional to represent them and advocate for them. I recognize that we do not have time to go through all of the issues that brokers would like to address with MNsure and the details around those issues. We are more than willing to work offline about this with MNsure and to address and hopefully solve the issues that brokers have on behalf of themselves and their clients. And again, I want to note that we have already seen a difference in how we are being engaged by MNsure, and I appeal to them today to follow through on their promises to work with us and collaborate with a licensed professional from here on out. We are, as Scott's Light pointed out, experienced and have a lot to offer MNsure with regard to how to help consumers. I ask that MNsure make the assister portal for brokers and navigators a priority, as we are essentially adrift with no oars or motor without that tool. I want to thank you for allowing me to have this time to talk to you, and I welcome any questions if you have any.
Ms. Riedel, thank you. We appreciate your taking the time for us. Are there questions or comments for Claire? I don't know who had their hand up first. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Riedel, and all the members of your association for your partnership in that. But I did want to have us pursue clarifying the record, because I think you made a statement that said you couldn't get paid for enrolling people in the public programs, and my understanding is that's not correct. It may not be paid on the percentage basis that you're used to in terms of placing people within a private insurance, but that is my memory, it was like $25 was the historic amount if you signed up in a program. And I know there are some options. It may be that some brokers choose not to take advantage of those, but we have had that for some time.
Brokers are not allowed to act as a navigator and get paid.
Well, why don't
We'll need to clarify that, because I know that even in the past, before MNsure, there was a program that allowed brokers to get some small compensation for helping MCHA with that handoff.
And Ms. Riedel, thanks. That's not take away from the many points that you made, and we appreciate
it. No, we just need to clarify
and
figure it out.
Probably the most important thing you said was the partnership that we need to have between agents, brokers, and MNsure. So thanks again for taking the time for us today. I don't have anybody else listed as signing up for the public testimony portion. Is there anyone else that desires to be heard at this time? Yes, ma'am. And thank you for your patience with us this afternoon. All you got to do is just identify who you are.
I will. I'm Sheila Van Pelt, and actually many of you as members I've been trying to reach out to and have been successful in getting meetings. And so, Chairman, thank you for letting me speak. My question revolves basically around the oversight with all these partnerships that you desperately, you know, we all need for working together, but then what oversight it is to know that we as the citizens of the state are having accountability and transparency and what types of outcomes are public knowledge for financial exchanges or relationship exchanges that can cause concern for the citizens of the state. And I don't know if that has been addressed within the committee hearings, but it's something I'm concerned with.
Okay. And thank you. We appreciate your comments. Is there anyone else that desires to be heard this afternoon? Welcome.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. Thank you. I'm Jean Lee, President and Executive Director, Children's Hope International, R&R Family Centers, and for APAC, the Asian Pacific American Housing Consortium. But we do more than that, because many of our educators are also, and counselors are also, part of the navigators. The issues that I raised, I'm happy to say that the MNsure board and staff had been trying to act on as far as testimony back in early December. And I do realize it takes time to work on the technical issues. So the issue as far as the need for better language so it can be understood by many of the people who might try and register themselves. That will take time, too, because as I testified, we do have people that have limited speaking English in our communities, and they use their teenagers to interpret. So to bring it to the level where such a young person could be able to understand and help their parents or relatives through that. And I understand that will take time. I also raised the issue as far as the data privacy. It concerns me after hearing what happened with Target and the vulnerabilities that they had there. Many of the people who will be signing up are victims of domestic abuse where their data needs to be very secure and private. So during the period of where it was insecure, the question then would be, you know, who had access to the data? Will it come up later or something to that effect? But just it needs to be addressed a little bit differently than others. And then I also wanted to raise the issue as far as we have brokers and insurance agents here. Everyone has to have auto insurance, and they're supposed to have homeowners insurance. And it's very easy to get, whether people buy it online or go to an insurance agent's office. And right away, as soon as you fill out the application and you make a payment, what they call a binder, it seems like it's a nominal payment or it could be staggered in monthly payments. That is essentially the effective date if you're talking about people needing to be covered right away. And I'm not sure how that system would fit in with the existing health system you're trying to do at Minshew. I did want to say that, like most people, they're going to be doing modifications of their plan, so they might expect that they'll be paying a certain amount and then later decide they want to make changes or their situation changes. And as you think and plan forward, and especially for the insurance brokers, they know how people switch policies and change locations, and if it's based on where they live and so forth. All these things need to be built in, and basically I'm wondering whether this so-called binder thing that you could do would meet the requirements as far as the federal deadline, you know, even though understanding there'll be modifications later and it won't be entirely accurate at the time that they're confirmed. As far as verifications, that's also an issue, too, you know, related to the wait time and whether they could be binded. The triage levels, I agree with Representative Loeffler, because many of the people, when you looked at the numbers of people who were eligible for medical assistance versus MinCare versus the ones who were paying the premium, a lot of these can be diverted so that the call system is not so bogged down with people who can fall into one of these categories, especially since with MinCare, they have a three-month look back. So consideration has to be made there as far as, you know, just tiding them over until, you know, things get worked out. And the issue is, as far as payment, even if they don't get a tax credit on a program, they can always get it later because, like any insurance policy, you have a change. Sometimes you have to pay more. Sometimes you get a refund back. And, I mean, things change, and that adaptability should be built into the system where they're still considered covered. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. Are there any questions for Ms. Lee? Is there anyone else that desires to be heard? All right, we got one more item on the agenda, and then we'll go back up to Mr. Leitz and Mr. Buettner. But in terms of meeting schedule, I tried to give 2 hours' notice that we were going to go through calendars, so hopefully folks have a calendar handy. And I know this is this should probably for the TV guy over here, make sure you get this. This is exciting. As we all go through and look
we're
at
our phones.
But if we look at like 4 weeks from now, that first week of February, I'll just tell you my calendar-wise, the 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th are pretty wide open. That first week of February, though, is horrible. I'll throw a date out there. If we went with the 11th. Okay. How about this? Anybody that can't do the 11th? Sean?
Mr. Chair, it depends. There's an early learning council meeting that day that I'm a member of that. So that is noon to 3. So it would depend on what time of day.
So if we went on the morning of the 11th?
A health cost study group with Representative Halverson that morning.
Okay. How about that week?
Kathy Sharon can't be there that whole week of the 10th.
And we will, unless, did anybody have a problem with this allowing members to phone in? Has anybody got, purposes of quorum or whatever, we're okay with that?
Yeah. We don't have any power, Mr. Chair, so we can't vote.
But we love you, nonetheless. So how about the 12th, morning of the 12th? Is there anybody who that does not work for? All right, then let's stop talking and say it's going to be the morning of the 12th. Members will have the opportunity to call in if need be. And I know Senator Sharon, I think, is out of town that week, but we will avail her of the possibility of the call-in option. So let's say the 12th, 9:30, Mr. Chairman, you're going to have the gavel next time?
Oh, yeah, 9:30, the 12th.
All right, that's it.
Okay.
So we've set the next meeting. We will be in a room to be announced. It'll probably be over here someplace. Circling back then, we were on items 4 or 5. Is there anybody here that can address the question that Senator Benson had from specifically MMB, I believe, about the contract issue? And if you're not prepared today, we understand because we didn't anticipate necessarily. We didn't have anybody from MMB. If there is not, then could someone please...
Mr. Chair, is there anybody from...
Let me just finish the phrase, though. I'd at least like to have a formal response or somebody from MMB that's prepared to talk about where things were at contractually. And I know everybody at the table, Representative Hoppe and others, have said the same thing. It's good to look back and learn from what's happened, but the most important thing is move forward and fix what... And so that we're getting folks who are in the process... unstuckedness or whatever that term was that Mr. Light started earlier. The main aim of this, of everybody here, is to move ahead and get it working. I get that. But maybe we can learn a little bit from what's happened as well. So from MMB specifically, the request about sort of the chronology or some overview of what the vendor situation was. And Senator Benson, I interrupted. I just wanted to finish that comment before I got too far.
Mr. Chair, I'm disappointed that the governor's office, MMB, who have oversight, didn't bother to have anybody here, particularly when the contract change is reasonably fresh news and is significant to the way this organization is being run. I think they're treating this committee, this oversight commission, very lightly, that they knew this issue was prescient, knew, according to your agenda, we were going to be talking about contracts, organizational structures, and didn't bother bothered with the legislature.
Express your disappointment with me, though. I chaired this committee. I didn't... Honestly, I didn't anticipate the need to have someone here from MMB, and if I had, I would have reached out and had them do that. But I think it might have been asking for a crystal ball for them to, and perhaps we've got various agencies and departments represented. My question to them is: there anyone who's prepared today to walk through the chronology and go through all of that? And in fairness to them, these are complex contractual documents. Dating back many, many months. Even if I had wrote those contracts myself, which I didn't, just so we're clear on that, I think it would be a handful to be prepared to respond to that. But I do expect, and I think all members of this commission expect, that we'll have a response to that. And if members want that on the agenda for this upcoming meeting, which we just set for the 12th or whatever it was, that would be a good opportunity to visit about that, too. And Mr. Lights, care to shed any further? I see you're up and about. Maybe you're just stretching your legs, but now you're in a position where you have to come up and visit with us once more.
Mr. Chair, Scott Leitz, I think, you know, to the questions around the contracting issue, I think what we can do is we'd be very happy to work with MMB and others who are involved in the process over the course of the last year to sort of maybe put together a little bit of a chronology that would might be helpful for the committee in your work moving forward to sort of get a sense of when things occurred over the period of time that they occurred and just give you some background on that. I think that's something that we can concretely put together for this for the group.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Leitz.
And
Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Leitz, can you please indicate to us who had authority and who made those decisions? Because we can't seem to get to the bottom of any decision-making. There seems to be sort of this amoeba organization where nobody's really held accountable, but things seem to be moving forward. And it is our responsibility as people with oversight to know what's going on with this organization, because it has not run well. And while we can look forward and try to fix the mistakes, if there aren't lessons learned in a corporate or private environment, there'd be an after-action report, and it would be seriously debriefed with all the executives involved. And right now, I have no idea who's actually responsible for this organization, except for you, Mr. Leitz, and you, Chair Buettner. I watched your last board meeting, and the board is stepping up. And it's important that that happened, but I'd like to know why it wasn't happening months ago.
Okay. Mr. Leitz, and then Senator, well, Mr. Leitz, Representative Hoppe, Senator Lori, and then we're going to let the kids take over the role. So, Mr. Leitz.
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, yes, we will do our very best to get you those answers. I think they're legitimate ones, and we would like to be as forthright as we can be.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Leitz, thank you for that answer. And I think, well, I don't know, but I'm guessing if this was MMB, admin, commerce, DHS, Minsure, I don't know where, and if we could get either for the next meeting or with what you prepare to let us know and let the board know, you know, where does the buck stop? Is it, I mean, and maybe it's somebody in the governor's office.
And Senator Lori?
Well, to this point, earlier when we were discussing the end-to-end review, I mean, what I kind of heard about this review that started yesterday and that the report will be available last week, and during the course of the meeting, we did get an email that the contract is actually publicly available. I have called it up and read it. But I just want to confirm, I mean, it's my understanding from your description of it that it's going to look at the tech software, again, end-to-end, call center, end-to-end, and the project/programmatic structure. I look at that as contract management. I think many of these questions are the purview of this end-to-end review, and we'll gain some important insights, if maybe not the definitive answer, but some very important insights. So my question is, the results of that end-to-end review, are those going to be shared publicly? It is my hope that they are. Is that the case?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lori, it's yes.
One more. I know. Actually, my son's in YIG, so he might actually be in the building right now.
Well, all right.
So we're keeping him out of
I thought you said, but your son's unique, and then I realized what you really said.
No, in youth and government. Right. I apologize,
Senator,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
I actually have YIG as opposed to PIE. I have the words that go with my acronym. But I did want to check in. Chair Buettner and Mr. Leitz, how often do you speak with the governor, his representative, on progress being made on Minsure?
Do Mr. Leitz?
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, I would say that with regards to the governor's office, I'm in very frequent contact with him. I can't say specifically, but I suppose it's often during a week.
Okay.
It's about a number of issues, not just progress, but just things in general.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a brief question, kind of going forward. Mr. Buettner, I know we've talked with a lot of these ongoing questions and when people knew what and everything like that. My question to you is, what do you see as the board's role, I don't know if always or at least going forward, what is your interaction with Minsure, how that relationship?
And very briefly, you got about 30 seconds,
all
Mr.
Right,
Buettner.
Chairman Atkins, Representative Mack, it's a great question. We as a board are charged with the responsibility of oversight. We are not management. We're not going to be sitting there writing code, making decisions on what needs to happen on the ground on a daily basis. We operate as a board of directors. We provide oversight, leadership. We provide poking, prodding, and asking, quite frankly, the same questions that you've asked here. There were very many of the questions that you asked today are the same questions that we've been asking at the board and will continue to ask. And I take heart and encouragement from Senator Benson's comments that she's watching our meetings and seeing as we learn more, we ask more. And the simple way that I would describe our board role, if you look at our board members, the more information we have, the more questions we ask. And I'm thrilled and delighted with the increased openness and the increased information flow to the board.
Thank you all very much. Thank you, members. Thank you, everyone who joined us this afternoon. With that, we stand adjourned.